And after the department, we are going to have productivity essays. So what we'll do, we'll take the department and keep the questions, and immediately after the department, we won't discuss. I don't know how much time we have with us. Fine, okay. We won't discuss the presentation of the department. We'll go straight to productivity essays, and we'll then discuss both inputs at one time so that the members know how to do it. So over to you, DG, and the introduction of your answer.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, Honorable members. Good morning. Honorable Chair, I have a team of executives in the department, and what through you, Chair, I would ask them to, each one of them, just introduce themselves briefly so that you know who is here. And while we're at it, Chair, I'm going to request that the various sections that each one of them is responsible for, that they table their own sections. Thank you, Chair. Over to you.
Peggy Matona, the Chief Financial Officer of the Department.
Ngasule Pasha, the Acting Deputy Director General, Corporate Services.
Les Ketodas, Deputy Director General, Labor Policy and Labor Market Programs.
Sianda Zondeki, Deputy Director General, Service Delivery.
Sam Rutova, Deputy Director General, Public Employment Services.
Tumba Kupula, Communications, Western Cape.
Paula Puebo, Executive Manager, Program Management, PS, Working Group with Productivity SA.
Good morning. My name is Boaz Serowe, the UIF Commissioner.
Good morning. My name is Sheikh Mkonto, Compensation Commissioner.
Morning. My name is Lomkono Ndwangu, Chief Executive Officer, Sheltered Employment Factories.
Morning. My name is Dickson Kunikaya Mkono, a Parliamentary Liaison Officer, Department of Labor.
Morning, my name is Tina Royce, Executive Manager, DG's Office.
Penny Dooley.
Honorable Chair, Penny Dooley will be replacing Tina from 1st of April, so this is part of a handover. Okay, thank you, Chair. just press on there. Tina. Yeah, Chair, that is the table of contents that we take through members. That's the outline of the presentation. We'll briefly make the introduction. We talk to the vision of the department, and we just show our natural, our geographic spread, and then we talk to the various programs. Okay. Yeah. The Honorable Chair would remember that the last time we were here, I think, was around 16th of February, and we just want to table it here that indeed we have already presented our glossy report as of 2nd of March, and followed by a PowerPoint presentation last week. And we also want to table, Honorable Chair, that there is a serious alignment between our E&E and our threat plan. And we see today's meeting as a precursor to the minister's budget vote. Okay. The vision of the department, Honorable Chair, this is what it looks like, that the department will strive for a labor market which is conducive to investment, economic growth, employment creation, and decent work. We just put there as amended because then the ENE is the old vision. This is the new vision of the department as approved by the minister. The purpose of the department, this department does a whole range of things. We regulate the labor market, but I think precisely what we do is we regulate the relationship between the employer and the employee. So we don't do business to business. We do employer to employee relationship management. We tend to strengthen the weaker side in that relationship to ensure that there is a balance of power. That's what we try to do. We assist in the integration of the unemployed into the labor market. We ensure compliance through enforcement of all our labor legislation. And we provide protection to the unemployed and the injured. That's what we do. This chart here, Chair, just shows our national spread. We are throughout the country. We have provincial offices, all of them. As you would know, they all dovetail to the national office in Pretoria. We sit with 125 labor centers countrywide. We augment that with 20 mobile units that increase our point of presence in the various areas. Out of the 139 Tusong centers are sitting at 72. And I must make a point here, Chair, that some of the Tusong centers, in fact, Tusong centers as an idea came long after we had labor centers. So in certain areas, Tusong centers are very far from labor centers. And maybe just to clean up on the last discussion, it's not necessarily that we will eventually get into all 139 Tusong centers, because some of them are just near our labor centers, and sometimes it's better to operate from our labor centers. So we use Tusong centers to increase our reach. So in areas where there's a Tusong center, there's no labor center, we use a Tusong center. So we use Tusong centers to augment our point of presence. These are the government priorities, Chair, just to show that as a department, we are not just operating in a tangent, but operating within the framework of government. Some of the government outcomes as listed there are some of the things that we work on. In line with the ENE, Chair, these are the programs that the department is doing. We've got administration, which talks through a whole range of real administrative issues. Digital Office, the COO, the CIO, CFO, HR, Legal, and Communication. This is really the establishment part of the organization. And then we have a program on inspection and enforcement. Sandra is the DDG that's going to talk to that. We also have a program called Public Employment Services. Sam Murotoba is going to talk to that. We then also have labor policy and labor market program. Jeff Kessler is going to talk to that. We put the last one in red because they have their own presentations, and I think they're talking to the committee tomorrow, the unemployment insurance fund and compensation fund, either tomorrow or this afternoon, but they're talking to the committee. Is it Friday? Thank you. On Friday, they're talking to the committee on Friday, so they have their own separate presentations. In terms of administration, we have a small contribution to make in terms of building a developmental state. Next one. We have an office, Honorable Chair, called the Chief Operations Officer. This is a new position that we have, and the purpose of this position is really to ensure that there is efficiencies in the department, to ensure that every rent goes as long as it can go. That's really what we want to do with that office. It's going to come up with all kinds of matrices to ensure that the inspectors, everybody in the establishment is doing what they can do in the best optimum way. So that office is really going to make sure that we do that. All cost containment, etc. This office is going to ensure that those things happen. The various audit issues that must be followed up as of yesterday. That office is going to make sure that those things happen. We then have also a chief information officer. This is a person that looks after our IT infrastructure. Very soon we'll be having to make a decision on how to proceed in terms of the Triple P. We know that very soon it's coming to an end. So that is the office that's going to be leading the strategy around how we're going to reorganize our IT environment. And then we have the office of the CFO, and I think at this point I'm going to hand over to him to talk to his office.
Within administration, we've got the Office of the Chief Financial Officer, which is responsible for financial management, which deals with the accurate, timely, and effective financial financial systems and accurate and timely management information system. The other part is the financial liaison public entities, which is responsible for the few public entities that are in the department, namely SAF, Productivity SA, NetLex, CCMA. The last one is the office administration and supply chain, which is responsible for effective office administration and supply chain management, capital maintenance and these projects, and accommodation. The effective transport and record management, the last one being the effective asset management.
We have the risk management, we have communication, legal services, security, and risk management. On human resource management, we have advertised posts, and we are still busy filling all the funded posts in the department. There is also we have also revised the departmental employment equity plan, and is also implemented and monitored. We also monitor the individual employee performance every 6 months, and jobs are evaluated. That is, positions from level 9 upwards, they are evaluated every 3 years. And we facilitate the investigation of automated performance management systems. We are benchmarking with other institutions such as the SARS and Army software solutions. We have already scheduled provisionally some dates so that we can go and sit with them, so that we can learn from them as they will be demonstrating to us by means of presentations. We also manage the bursary payment processes in the sense that we also make it a point that the process, the institutions with which our employees are registered are paid timely. Communication. In communication, we promote and service the intranet. The intranet is the web that is being used internally. We improve access to the intranet under other tools, such as the accessing of leads, any other information which has to be accessed by the employees. The IES marketing and information sessions of domestic and farm workers, and wide consultation with unions to encourage the creation of structures for the unionization of the of these workers. Also facilitate public hearings within communities on labor brokers and typical forms of employment, complemented by a formal research program. This will serve as a contribution towards the decent work agenda. And legal services is also giving support in the sense that we draft contracts for the department, policies,
legislation, edit and amend legislation, also investigate on behalf, also litigate on behalf of the department.
Thank you, TJ. I'll talk to the Inspection and Enforcement Services Chairperson in a minute. The purpose of the Inspection and Enforcement Services is to ensure implementation of and compliance with the Department of Labor policies and programs through monitoring, evaluation, and inspection. And that following is the measurable objectives as contained in the estimates of national expenditure. The first point is to ensure decent work principles are adhered to by improving compliance with labor legislation by end of March 2011 through regular inspections. We'll also pursue the reduction of workplace injuries and incidents through regular audits, inspections to ensure health and safety of workers. We'll also improve compliance with all labor legislation related to protection of vulnerable workers in targeted sectors, including SMMEs, by end of March 2011 through targeted campaigns and regular inspections. We'll also ensure transformation of the labor market by achieving compliance with the Employment Equity Act through awareness raising and regular inspections and audits. For this year, we are scheduled to ensure that the research on silica, the baseline on silica is done. Because we need to ensure that we reduce exposure to silica dust in the non-mining industry. We'll also review the legislation in terms of ensuring that we amend the regulations in terms of occupational health and safety. The roving safety representatives, which is a team which has undergone training, which we have reported here in the past. The training is now complete. They will be out in the field to ensure that there is protection in terms of health and safety. We will be piloting this team in Limpopo and Mpumalanga. We'll also, in terms of compliance and monitoring and ensuring enforcement of the legislation, we'll conduct blitz inspections in the high-risk sectors and those problematic sectors, as we have done also in this year that's ending this month with the monthly blitz inspections that we're doing. We'll continue with that program. We'll also implement the professionalization of the inspectorate, which we've been talking about for quite some time now, which we're hoping that it will be implemented in phases based on the funding available. We'll also develop and implement the IES case management system with a go-live date in August this year. We'll also ensure that we promote self-regulation for those employers who are capable of regulating themselves. And lastly, we'll also reduce incidents, diseases, and fatalities. And we've been setting a target here at 2%. We'll pursue this also this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, the Minister, Honorable Members. If you are to support the vote for employment services, what we intend contributing towards as part of the national goal is to assist in reducing unemployment by placing people in decent work and contributing to inclusive economic growth. Now, in the ENE, we listed seven main objectives, the first one being to finalize the Public Employment Services Bill. Now, just briefly, we
we're sitting with a Skills Development Act that sits between two ministers, the Minister of Higher Education and Training and Minister of Labour, because of the transfer process that happened. And we're having to manage the act in two different departments. Secondly, we have since noticed that we have not provided sufficient attention to some of the employment services functions, and we also are trying to, in the context of this bill, to put together all the employment services functions that are found in the different pieces of labor laws in a single home, and to strengthen the link between the unemployment insurance fund, the compensation fund, and the sheltered employment factories, and lastly, the promotion of employment of people with disabilities, and to strengthen some of the sections that are being lifted out of the Skills Development Act. The second major objective is to ensure that at least 70% of unemployed people registered on the PEP system are referred to areas such as career counseling, training, work placement opportunities, and UI compensation benefit within 30 days. Obviously, we've put targets for ourselves to exceed the 70% in the outer years as our system gets functioning quite well. And to make sure that where employers come to us, especially distressed companies, within 5 days, we are able to point them to areas of assistance. We also are aiming at ensuring that at least 120 companies are assisted through Workplace Challenge Program through the Productivity SA, and that 24,000 jobs are saved through the social plan intervention. And through the sheltered employment factories, we are going to lobby government departments to ensure that at least 30% of orders or purchases from the service products or sheltered employment factories are done there, and that will then assist us to increase or take on additional 500 people with disabilities in this factory. And we are also going to use these factories to establish a pilot project to train and place at least 50 learners per factory. This translates to 600 because we have 12 factories. And we singled out, I mean, this is in the E&E. In our detailed strategic plan, we actually went deeper than that to outline the areas that we'll do in terms of public employment services, which is 60% of existing companies, 60 existing companies and departments register vacancies by end of March 2011. Obviously, we set targets for outer years. 40% of existing private placement agencies are registered with the department and license, and that we are able to process a number of migrants' corporate or work permits within 15 days because we work with the Department of Home Affairs under the Immigration Act in processing this permit, and that the number of companies in distress sector are provided with assistance. Earlier on, I talked about the 5 days, which is the referral. Here, we basically putting together a number of entities such as the CCMA, etc., that in 15 days at least we can give them assistance. And that 50% of the infrastructure is rolled out to enhance capacity for provision of employment services system. Here we have an ESSA system that we're rolling out. Under the employer services, the registration and placement services indicator, we are aiming to register 100% of job seekers in different categories. This may be those that want to refer to skills development for UIF claims, etc. and that out of the registered 100%, at least a minimum of 70% is referred to all those areas that I've mentioned, and that 70% of designated groups such as youth, people with disabilities, etc., are assisted to participate in income generating intervention. In the sheltered employment factories, we aim to increase the sales of goods produced in the 12 factories to 30%, like I said, and that each factory will take on 50 youth, and that those 50 youth will be trained and made sure that on completion they are assisted to enter into the mainstream economy. The intention is not to keep these people forever in these factories. The whole idea is to make sure that as part of achieving employment equity goals and so on, employers begin to use these factories as a recruitment base. Under Productivity SA, 120 companies will be assisted under the Workplace Challenge. This is where we work with the Department of Trade and Industry, and that at least 3,000 SME managers are assisted to manage matters related to intellectual properties, etc. This has to do with the registration of all those products and services that they produce, that they are not stolen by big companies, and that they also, in terms of this process, contribute to employment creation. And 20,000 jobs are saved through social plan, and that we conduct a number of research areas within the municipality SME program, how we are competing with other countries, and how the public sector is being productive. Obviously, Productivity SA will add more when they do their presentation. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairman.
Thank you, Chairperson, Minister. My program will deal with a few areas, the first one being the promotion of employment equity. The first area there is that we are currently in the process of looking at the Employment Equity Act for possible amendments to strengthen the enforcement mechanism. Arising from that, also amendments to the Employment Equity Regulation. Thirdly, we would be looking at a review of the Code of Good Practice and Technical Assistance Guidelines on HIV and AIDS. You may be aware that currently there is a discussion in the ILO on a standard for an international standard for HIV and AIDS in the workplace, and they are looking at the adoption of a recommendation in this area. And arising from that, we may have to make some adjustments to our Code of Good Practice and Technical Assistance Guidelines to incorporate some of those recommendations that will flow from the discussion. Lastly, the process of substantive compliance with the Employment Equity Act will continue with the JSE-listed companies. We have done quite a lot thus far. And the way in which the process works is that we will review the substantive compliance of these companies. The DG will make recommendations to them in writing, and then we will follow up from there to see that they implement those recommendations and then give them feedback where we believe that they are not meeting the recommendations. In the area of protection of vulnerable workers, also in the current process of the labor legislation review, we're looking at the Basic Conditions of Employment Act to make amendments to deal with the issue of labor tenants. We have previously discussed in this committee the problem that we experience with regard to proper protection for labor tenants, especially in the areas of Utrecht, Vrijheid, Newcastle, Dundee, those areas. Secondly, we will continue to maintain a general program to update our sectoral determinations. to continue in providing protection for farm and domestic workers, workers in the private security and hospitality sectors, wholesale and retail workers, and the review of the learnership determination. These sectoral determinations cover minimum wages and the basic compliance of standards with the BCAA, but we, and they also last for a period of 3 years and then they are reviewed. So it's a continuous process of reviewing the sectoral determinations to make sure that they keep up to date with the changing labor market trends. We'll continue to develop new sectoral determinations. We'll develop a new sectoral determination for unskilled workers, workers in the welfare sector, and workers in the building and construction sector where bargaining councils have collapsed. There are some areas. These bargaining councils in building and construction are regional bargaining councils. They are not one national bargaining council. So you find that in some areas the councils have collapsed. You have one for Gauteng, you have in the Boerland, you have Eastern Cape, and so on. We provide norms and benchmarks for proportionate income differentials. The law requires that the Employment Condition Commission investigate norms and benchmarks for proportionate income differentials and then make recommendations to the minister on what measures should be taken to deal with those in the labor market. We will continue to fund civil society organizations through the Strengthening of Civil Society Fund. We have over the years funded institutions like DITSELA, the Education and Training Institute servicing the labor movement. We've also funded the Workers' College in Natal and other organizations that seek to promote understanding and compliance of our labor legislation. And this will be done with immeasurable time indicators as set out there. I don't have to go into those. The in a promotion of sound labor relations, we will implement amendments that will flow from the Labor Relations Act, particularly those dealing with the issue of labor broking, contract work, subcontracting, and outsourcing, and other methods that would be covered by a review of the LRA. We will then continue to implement the LRA through firstly the extension of collective agreement. Bargaining councils, when they have reached a collective agreement, they then lodge that with the department and the minister then promulgates those. And most of those agreements are extended to non-parties within the sectors in which they cover. We'll continue to register labor organizations. Labor organizations are not labor brokers, they are trade unions and employer organizations. We have roughly 215 trade unions at the moment registered and about 183 employer bodies. So this is an ongoing process where trade unions register or where employer bodies register. So that's a continuous function within the department. I don't have to go into the standard set there. I think that can be taken as read. In the last area, develop and implement research, monitoring, and evaluation agenda. We'll continue to provide labor market information and statistical analysis. In this area, we produce various reports around the labor market, for example, industrial action report, which sets out a review of industrial action in the labor market, number of strikes that there were, how many workers were involved, how many workdays were lost, what were the issues around which people went on strike. We review the statistics that the Statistics South Africa produced through the quarterly labor force surveys and so on. We also produce an annual labor market bulletin that contains quite a lot of useful information on the labor market. Facilitate compliance with international obligations. We are a member of the International Labour Organization since 1994. We have ratified about 20 ILO conventions, We are required in terms of the ILO Constitution to regularly report on the application of those conventions in our country and also respond to observations and direct requests from the Committee of Experts on in the ILO on the implementation or application of the conventions and recommendations. Then lastly, we facilitate bilateral, multilateral relations. In this area, we are a member of SADC. We participate in the SADC employment and labor sector. If you will recall, we hosted the SADC employment and labor sector here last year. We are also a member of the African Union, and we participate in the African Union Labor and Social Affairs Commission. Those are annual meetings, so we continue to participate on those, in those. And then we also have bilateral relations with a number of countries, a number of them in the region here, with Namibia, Lesotho, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, others further afield like China, Cuba, and so on. So we continue to facilitate those bilateral and multilateral relations. I think that's the last chairperson. Thank you very much.
Okay, chairperson, just to talk to the budget. We don't particularly have good news here, Honorable Chair, in that if one looks at the task at hand in the statutory document and one looks at the budget that we have, we've got very meager resources to achieve what we need to achieve. If I just take the chair through just the 10-11 in terms of what we have in the allocation, that's how that we really need. It's actually chalk and cheese, unfortunately. I mean, if one looks at the administration, chair, this department is a totally underfunded department. This is a department of professionals, this department. The people that do the work in this department are all highly educated and highly specialized people, which you need to find in the market. If I look, for instance, under administration, we need actually an additional 300 million to be able to run this department properly. We don't have the statisticians which we should have. This department works with numbers. Our labor market information system is suffering in this department. We need to have people that know how to do number crunching. We have a whole range of audit issues in the department. We need a lot of numerate people to put in the department. The number of CAs, I don't even know if we have more than 3 CAs in the department. We need to inject a lot of CAs in the department. Labor market experts. We don't have labor market experts in the department. So, Chair, in terms of administration and making sure that the department has got the right number of professionals to run this ship professionally, that number there is really not looking good. If one looks at the enforcement and inspection, one of the biggest challenges in this country, Chair, is the issue of transformation. In all sectors, transformation in South Africa is behind. And everybody is asking, why is it that this government is not operating? Why are we so weak as government? Why is it that this government is not seen to be taking a decisive step when there are a lot of transgressors? It's the issue of capacity. We don't have enough professional people that do the things that we need to do. The strategy in that division, Honorable Chair, is to professionalize that. What that means is that for all the inspectors that need to go and do a proper job under the construction sector, these are the people that must be civil engineers. We want to have civil engineers inspecting buildings. We want to have civil engineers inspecting all the construction work that you can have. We want to have medical doctors going through the various hospitals and making sure that all the medical equipment is where it should be. We want to have veterinary science people. There's a whole range of team of experts, Honorable Chair, that we need to have. Which we don't have at this stage. Employment equity is suffering. We need to have seasoned HR professionals that can engage toe-to-toe with CEOs in this country under employment equity and all that. and we do have the people that we have, but most of them are generalists. We need, as we professionalize this environment, we need to make sure that we are properly capacitated. Labor market policy and program, there we've got a lot of transfers, we've got other public entities that are battling to survive. If one looks at, starting with the role of NEDLAC, NEDLAC has continuously increasing its importance as a center for social dialogue. The budget of NEDLAC is a meager 15 million, and this is a very important institution in this country. We need to ensure that in that allocation, because that program, the program of four, also has a lot of transfers to institutions like NEDLAC. So NEDLAC is really suffering. We need more money for NEDLAC. With CCMA, Chair, that organization is on ICU in terms of its funding. We need, and if one looks at the number of complaints, number of cases that NEDLAC is dealing with, to be able to contain that whole situation with all these commissioners and all of that, to pay for that whole operation, that number is not going to do it. In total, Chair, we as this department, in my rough estimate, this department needs an additional 1 billion to be able to operate properly. 1 billion additional is what this department needs in order to deliver decisively on this mandate. Next. This is just a spread of what we spread this money around, around compensation of employees, goods and services. Which talks to a whole range of leases that we have. And again, that is another line item that is going to increase, because as we broaden our reach, we have to get into a lot more accommodation and so on. Transfers and subsidies, that's a number. Payment of capital assets, that's a number. But if you look at the next slide, this talks to some of the transfers that we do. Sheltered employment, we've got a big dream there, Honorable Chair. This is the only institution in this country that can pride itself in terms of ensuring that people with disabilities are put into productive use. We're creating a center of excellence. We want to ensure that South Africa, because South Africa generally doesn't have time to train people, but in this institution, we have well over 12 of these factories right across the country. This is where we're honing in skills. We want to make sure that we create a repository for a talent of people with disabilities that have got skills. Now, for that to happen, we need a lot of support. Productivity, South Africa. We're doing a lot of good work there, Chair, to ensure that the companies in this country get more productive. We run a whole range of programs with companies in this country to ensure that their productivity is enhanced, so that eventually the retention of jobs can happen. NEDLAC, as I said, took a meager 15 million. This is a very important institution. We should double that budget in order for NEDLAC to do what it needs to do. CCMA, Chair, you know, if I look at, just as an example, a number of employees that are covered in the last reports of the employment equity, we're sitting with some 3 million odd employees that were covered in the last report. Now, potentially, it's 3 million cases in just those companies alone. Now, to imagine that nobody pays for CCMA services, we're sitting with a very, very serious and a dire situation. But CCMA will make their case when they come here on Friday. But I must indicate, Chair, that from time to time, we have to do additional funding. Just about every 2 months, CCMA comes knocking. So that institution is really battling to survive. Next slide. If you look at this distribution of funds, Chair, I think even private sector would be very envious to see that as a government department, in terms of administration, we're only spending 36%. 64% of our money goes into programs. So what that says, Chair, is that in terms of the fund utilization, this department is doing what should be done, that most of the money is going into projects is going into the service delivery, is going to where it should go. Only 36% is that going to administration. So we're of the view that in terms of the spread of the money, the bulk of the money is going where it's needed at service delivery. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you,
DG.
Is that all from the department? In terms of presentations, you are all done. Okay. Thank you for your comprehensive presentation, members of the department. Now we are going to give an opportunity to Productivity SA. There's a space here, so you can occupy the space that is here. Oh, members, there's tea at the back there. Please, you can go at the back and have some tea and sandwich silently and come back to your places. I know. Okay, we can just take a 5 minute break while they are, you know, sorting themselves up. I realized that the new face is, I'm told there's a new board. So when we came in this morning, I was early, so I found them seated here. I thought I was lost. I nearly, you know, fortunately I was with the secretary, and then she also did not realize that, you know, because she's also new. So you'll go through, you'll do your introduction and tell us who's around here, but you're welcome. Welcome to Parliament, and we hope that we will have a good relationship if we understand each other. Everybody has to do what he or she has to do according to the law. So if you stick to what you're supposed to be doing, there'll be no problem.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thanks for that warm welcome. Good morning, Madam Chair. Morning, Honourable Minister. Honourable portfolio members. Productivity SA is here today to present their strategic plan. But before we go there, as the Honourable Chairperson has said, we are a new board, and from that perspective, board members will just quickly introduce themselves. I'm Alvin Nell, the Chairperson. Over to the other board members.
Sorry, just before introduction, please just indicate if you are a new member. I know that you are all new members of the board, but at times you are new, but are those who have been in the board for years. Just indicate that to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm new in the board. Thank you, Madam Chair. And the new chairperson. Thank you.
Morning, Honourable Member. I'm Jonas Musia, new member of the board.
My name is Julius Nyalunga. I'm from the Department of Trade and Industry. I'm also a new member of the board.
Morning, Chairperson. I'm Sam Rotoba, also a member of the Productivity SA. I was part of the previous board.
Morning, Chair. I'm Paula Squibo. I work closely with the Productivity SA, but as executive manager on employment services.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is our board, and now we will ask our acting CEO to introduce the executive team, and thereafter the CEO will start with the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister.
Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of Parliament, I'll start by introducing my colleagues in the executive. The entire executive is here. I'm Bongani Koka, the acting CEO as well as the CFO. And on my right, I have Mr. Iki Sateke, who is heading communication and marketing. And then I'll and then on the left-hand side, I'll ask him to raise his hand. I have Mr. Neville Koba, who is an executive looking after organizational productivity. And then next to him, we have Mrs. Mutsunga Mashamba, who is the executive manager that looks after the turnaround solutions. Next to her, we have Ms. Lavdelia Mawupie, who is our HR executive. And then lastly, we have Mr. Selo Masai, who is our research, who is our executive looking after value chain competitiveness. So I'll be taking you through the presentation, and thanks for the second opportunity to explain what the role of productivity SA is in the economy of the country. Productivity SA was established in 1968, and last year we were able to celebrate 40 years of our existence, and we're able to indicate the things we've achieved over the period of 40 years. And the composition of Productivity SA had an advisory council coming from employer organization, employee organization, as well as government. Currently, even at board level, we have representation from government, business, as well as labor. And the National Productivity SA, which was then NPI, was registered as a Section 21 company in 1975. And then in the year 2007, we changed the name from National Productivity Institute, NPI, to Productivity SA to reflect what we are all about and to remove the confusion that was then existing in the market. And then currently, Productivity SA is registered as a fully-fledged Schedule 3A under Skills Development Amendment Act of 2008. And under this schedule, Productivity SA complies with the requirements set out in Schedule 4 of the bill, which indicates the Constitution as well as the board. In terms of what we are all about, the vision of Productivity SA is to lead a productive and competitive South Africa. Productivity leads to competitiveness, and in an economy where there's high level of productivity, you achieve competitiveness. And then in terms of our mission indicates our tripartite nature, which I've indicated, that which is represented at the board, as well as our way of doing things to ensure that we are inclusive. And we are dedicated to the development and enhancement of South Africa's productivity by unleashing the spirit of continuous productivity improvement. So where we have done intervention, we ensure that there is continuous improvement. And in terms of the strategic intent, we have identified the focus areas over the five-year period that will build and make Productivity SA a better organization. And those areas are positioning and branding, talent management, because we believe that the most important asset for Productivity SA is its people, organization development, knowledge management, research, service offering, stakeholder management, as well as looking at monitoring and evaluating the work that we are doing. And in terms of the programs, we've taken our work and we've divided them into four programs, as well as two support functions. Hence, I've indicated that I have full complement of my executive. So the first program is value chain competitiveness. The second one is positioning and branding management. We have a turnaround solution, which is commonly known as social plan. And we also have organizational productivity solution as one of the programs. And as indicated, we also have two executives that are supportive, mainly the CFO that looks after finance and admin, as well as the HR executive. And in terms of our structure, we are having a staff complement of about 86 with a vacancy rate of about 7, 4 of which will be filled in by the end of March. And in terms of our structure, as was indicated in the earlier presentation, we report under the Department of Labor. Our board is appointed by the minister. We have the acting CEO with the PA, as well as the office manager. And the what you see there as the next level is the executives that I have introduced to you, meaning those functions. And what we also have is two offices that are located in KZN as well as Cape Town. And our corporate office is located in Midrand. Okay, can move on to the next one because I've already covered. In terms of our approach, which is our way of doing things, we ensure that we are customer-focused and people-centered because, as indicated, that our customers are very important. We need to be responsive to their needs. And we also promote collaboration between management and labor. That's our philosophy. We don't embark on an intervention unless there's a clear understanding that there will be collaboration between management and labor. And that kind of approach has indicated to us that in those environments where there's democratization of the workplace, there's high staff morale, you are able to get improvement in innovation, you are also able to get a high level of productivity improvement. And what I will also be doing is to give you a snippet of the endorsement of the collaboration between management and labor in one of our interventions. So I think we'll have to deal with the speaker. I think currently we do not have the correct sound. And if we're unable to do that, then we'll skip that part. And just going back to our approach, we can go back to the previous slide. I spoke about collaboration between management and labor. What we're trying to show there is one of the interventions in the post office where we were looking at a turnaround in one section of the post office, and because of what they saw in the Future Forum, the improvements that came as a result of creating Future Forum, they funded creation of more Future Forum in other sections of the post office, which was an indication that it's a formula that works. And the other issue that we bring into our approach, we encourage productivity mindset that is internalized. Productivity should not be happening at workplace, but somebody has embraced productivity. He applies that productivity mindset even in personal life. We are multidisciplinary and integrative. We don't just sell one particular tool, but we look at the environment and implement all the tools that are required. We promote social and environmental sustainability. In one of our programs that looks at awarding company for productivity, we don't just look at the profitability that the company has achieved, but we look at the social environment. Are they socially responsive? Were jobs created? Are they sensitive to the environment? And what we also do to make a bigger impact, we look at sector and cluster-based approach. We also ensure that we do a proper alignment between what we are doing and government priorities. We do look at a state of the nation address and do alignment. We do look at the budget speech. We do respond to Minister of Labor's budget speech in terms of ensuring that there's alignment. And we also deliver through partnership, network, and alliances. Given the size of our budget and size of productivity, they wouldn't be able to deliver on the numbers that we are delivering if it were not of the networks as well as the partnerships that we're having. And we are continuing to work on creating more partnership and networks. Looking at the first program, which is the positioning, branding, and stakeholder management, this program has got three broad objectives. The first one is to inspire South Africa towards greater productivity achievement, because as indicated that we want to, our ultimate goal is to have a competitive economy. And the second objective is to build legacy for the proper productivity. So we want that association between work on productivity as well as productivity essay. And the third aspect is to build appropriate relationship between productivity essay as well as its stakeholders. We need to know what the stakeholder is expecting of us, and we need to be responsive to those needs. We need to create more stakeholders in order for us to be more effective in what we're doing. What we also decided to do in 2006 is to also request to the Minister of Labour to be the patron for our productivity movement, which he agreed to do. Because unless there is a person that can identify with productivity movement, we wouldn't be able to make impact in the economy. What we have also been able to achieve as part of this program has been running a productivity awards for over 17 years. And over the years, we have been selecting speakers of high profile, and it's been from the tripartite, which is organized business, organized labor, as well as government. And what we're able to get in the past few years is to get Mr. Mandi Simpahle, who has been the Minister of Trade and Industry. We have also succeeded in getting Mr. Jean-Claude Lausen, who is the President of World Congress of Productivity Sciences. We succeeded from the business side in terms of getting Mr. Steve Ross, who is the CEO of Edcon. We managed in 1 year to get Ms. Jill Marcus, who is now the Governor of the Reserve Bank. We were also able to get Mr. Gwede Mandash, who then was within the union movement. And last year, we had Mr. Joseph Matekeni as our guest speaker. That helps us in terms of drawing attention and buy-in into productivity movement. And in terms of what this program has achieved, I will not take you through the minimum target, but I will just indicate the areas where we've been able to get the outcome. The first one being national awareness campaign, so where we're going out and ensuring that the South African economy knows about who we are in terms of print and electronic campaign, interactive campaign where we interact with the recipient, as well as media articles published. In terms of commenting about media articles published, this year we're able to exceed the target because we had set the target of 70, and that target was exceeded as early as October. So we decided to increase that target to 80, which is the minimum, and we believe that it can be exceeded. And the other area of outcome is productivity-related knowledge at a strategic level to support the national productivity campaign, where we continuously do the website revamp, because website is one of the doors in which recipients of our services can be able to interact with us. What we intend doing is to distribute productivity information brochures, electronic newsletter, quarterly productivity magazine, which is used by not only our stakeholders, but people who want to know more about productivity information, including learners as well as students. And we also publish annual report that articulates our services. And over years, we started with Productivity Month, where throughout the month, we market the programs that Productivity SA is involved in. So currently we are having two regional and one national. And last year in the regional one, we were able to get the we initially invited the Premier of Gauteng of KZN, but we eventually got the MEC for Economic Development the positive outcome of that interaction is that KZN has undertaken to sponsor the event and to ensure that it's bigger and that they are able to fund as well as to promote it within the region. And then the next program that I'll be looking at is the turnaround solution, which is popularly known as the social plan. But the reason why we had to name it the turnaround solution is to distinguish it from the other two phases of the social plan. The second phase being managing retrenchments and the third phase being job creation. With productivity SA only looking at the first phase, which is the turnaround solutions. And in terms of the background, the social plan arose as a result of Job Summit in 1998, where there was a concern about the job losses within the economy. And at NEDLAC level, a decision was made that social plan interventions should be implemented. And Productivity SA was mandated to look at the first phase. And throughout the period, the funding has been coming through the Department of Labor. The objective is to create sustainable level of employment and to prevent unemployment as well as to retain jobs, because we believe that in instances where productivity improvement is taking place, those environments are able to create more jobs. And then what we also involved in terms of the social plan, there has been a good correlationship between the job losses in the economy as well as our interventions. Our interventions have covered over the years the sectors such as agriculture, metal and steel, clothing and textile as the top three over the period of 10 years. That's where we've been able to make the biggest impact. And then what we are also proud of is that over the period of 10 years, we have been able to save over 119 jobs in more than 2380 companies and created more than 586 jobs. The reason why more than 586 is that if we were to go back from year one, we would establish that it's a bigger number, but the 586 is the number we have verified. And in terms of the targets, what we plan on an annual basis is to target about 140 companies in the year 2010-2011. And the indicators of our interventions are the number of future forums, because as indicated, we don't embark on an intervention unless there's an agreement to create a future forum. We look at work plans that will be compiled, closeout report, which is interventions that have come to an end. We also do impact assessment, which looks at the position that the company was in when we first did intervention and the impact that we have made. And what we also do as an important intervention, we ensure that the company implements early warning system. The early warning system assists the company in terms of going forward. They would not wait until things get out of hand, but those early warning system will alert them that there is a problem that's looming and they need to do something about it. And we also have come up with what is called Proactive Future Forum. Proactive Future Forum is saying that the company doesn't have to wait until they are in trouble, but what they can do is that they can look at the key drivers within their business and ensure that there is a benchmark for those key drivers, that they don't fall below a certain level, and that if there are areas where they're beginning to show some indication of weakness, that those are addressed immediately. And what we intend doing is that the number of jobs that will be impacted upon in the next financial year starting in April will be over 20,000. And the next outcome under this program is that we intend working with Sheltered Employment Fund as a pilot. We have partnership with our Japanese counterparts, so what we will be doing is we will be visiting one of the factories. We will be doing an assessment and set goals in terms of improving productivity improvement in that particular site. And whatever good lessons learned, then they can be rolled to other factories. And what we also intend doing is to do a minimum of a turnaround in one of the sheltered factories. But based on the discussion we had last week, we can even do as many as three. The next program that I will cover is value chain competitiveness. The value chain competitiveness has got four aspects. The first aspect was covered when Department of Labor was presenting a program for the year, and they referred to the program known as Workplace Challenge that ensures that stable companies achieve world-class competitiveness. We take them through the journey, and we help them to learn from each other and improve over a period. And at the end of the interventions, we measure the impact. The second aspect is to embark on productivity-related research such that productivity SA is a reliable source for productivity-related information. And the third aspect is knowledge management within productivity SA, as well as helping companies that are struggling with knowledge management. And the fourth aspect covers information technology. We use information technology for automating our solution as well as supporting our strategic objectives. In terms of the workplace challenge, the processes that we follow is that we nature companies, which is bringing companies on board, and the way we go about is we approach the companies, we use the referrals for bringing companies on board and explain what we're all about, and we do capacity building workshops. We ensure that people who collaborate and come up with ideas are well trained in terms of understanding what are the issues that they need to be looking at when they collaborate. And we also implement workplace transformation clusters. Clusters is the way of ensuring that medium, small, and international companies can be able to learn from each other. And the size of this cluster is between 6 and 9 enterprises. And what we also do is we don't leave them after the end of the program, but we have an aftercare program that ensures that continuous productivity improvement takes place. And what we also do is work on creating model companies. Model companies become a case study that if you want to increase your high level competitiveness, what are the measures that you need to put in place? And we also ensure that there is continuous improvement within the companies that we're working in. And we implement awareness and dissemination program. So where even companies that have not participated can learn and understand what you benefit out of working within Productivity SA programs. And in terms of the program highlights, what this program, the Workplace Challenge, does is it helps companies to be able to articulate four areas: speed, quality, cost, as well as morale. So what we do is we do measurement, which is the baseline, which is where the company is before the measurement, before the interventions have taken place. And what we then do after a period of about 2 years, we go back and do measurement to see if there has been an improvement. So in the study that we conducted for the companies that you've done intervention on, we have statistics that show that in terms of speed has improved by about 25%. Quality, which is the reject rate, has improved by about 49%, which is quite significant. And the cost increases profitability and also create an environment for job creation. It has improved by 63%, and then morale has improved by about 14%. so which is an indication that this program has got an impact. And then in terms of the research that we are conducting, the outcome has been to productivity research report for selected sectors produced. So every year we prioritize and establish and identify sectors that we want to do study on and be able to advise on what the macro issues are. It also helps us when we are doing work at micro level to know where the challenges are in, for our interventions. And what we've also been able to do, we've been able to implement continuous improvement principles in companies through workplace challenge programs. We've been able to develop competitive value chains within industries as well as to conduct sector studies in distressed sectors, which has been very helpful in terms of feeding into the work that you are doing as a turnaround solutions of the social plan. The next program that I'm going to cover is organizational productivity solutions. The objective of this program, the first one, is to provide productivity training to intermediaries such as educators, SDF, and ETD service providers. We believe that if you follow that approach, you have a bigger impact because these people can go and train even more. While the second aspect, we do the direct training to our beneficiaries, where we train managers, workers, as well as emerging entrepreneurs. This program is also responsible for doing most of the training for the section dealing with companies that are in distress to ensure that when members sit in the future forum, they are capacitated and they can engage in issues that management is raising. And then the third aspect is to implement productivity improvement projects in government departments as well as private organizations. So where we do intervention for state-owned enterprises as well as private enterprise, we charge a market-related rate. And in terms of the targets for 2010-2011, the first outcome relates to capacitating education, training, and development of service providers. So where we are looking at training a minimum of 650 educators, and then where we are also looking at training a minimum of 3,000 SMMEs, and workers and managers train on productivity and productivity concept will do a minimum of 620. Then skills development facilitators, we hope this number will change significantly because we have entered into partnership with various CETAs that are helping us in terms of improving the number of skills development facilitators that we can train. So when we report, it will be a significantly high number. The number that you've stated is informed by the size of our budget. And then we have set out an objective of implementing productivity improvement projects in at least one government department. And what we also intend doing is that we want to build a pool of productivity experts in terms of working with internship. In terms of international partnership, what we strive to do is to ensure that the skills and competencies that we have are up to date and are cutting edge. In 2006, we entered into partnership with our Japanese counterparts with an aim of the transfer of skills. So to date, the partnership has worked significantly in terms of delivery, in the sense that 148 training intervention for Pan-Africanist Productivity Association members have been trained. And what we are also able to do is to get involved in observational studies where our consultants, meaning employees of productivity, say, were able to go to countries such as Singapore, Japan, and Thailand and learn the best practices which they were able to come back and implement within our environment. And what we have also achieved is that since 1996, we've been having AU status. And the last year, we were invited at the AU level to develop, and we are part of the implementation of productivity improvement program for Africa that covers a period of 5 years, which will be reviewed every 2 years. And annually, we report to SADC Committee, Minister for Employment, Labor, and Social Partners on productivity-related activities. In terms of ensuring that we continue to be relevant as well as make impact in our intervention, we've also identified an area known as monitoring and evaluation. The objective is to assess the efficiency and effectiveness of productivity. What we do externally, we also want it to be practiced within productivity SA. And on an annual basis, what we do is to do a survey from our customers in terms of them responding on these two aspects, relevance as well as value added. And then periodically at the end of every assignment, we will also be asking our customers to respond in terms of our intervention to establish if they are relevant and whether they are value-adding. The next aspect, which is support to the organization, is known as talent management and organizational development. We believe that our employees are key and they are our most important assets. If you remove employees of productivity, say you are without an organization. So that's an area that we regard as critical. So in terms of the focal areas for talent management, it's been talent sourcing and acquisition. The first aspect being recruitment. For the first time this year, we've had a very successful recruitment process. As I indicated, that at the moment, we have a staff complement of about 86 with 7 vacancies. 4 of those vacancies will be filled in by the end of this month. And it's owing to the fact that we measure our turnaround in terms of filling the post. And what has also gone a long way in terms of improving our vacancy rate is the fact that we have improved on staff retention. And the second aspect is talent management, where we look at retention of scarce skills. We have also put succession planning in place. And over years, our annual report will show that the number of our employees are promoted, and it's because we give them an opportunity to develop and to succeed their supervisors. And what we also do is we identify people with potential so that we can focus on developing them for the next level. And what we also do, we have a training and development that is informed by the skills gaps. And as well as the core competencies that we require within the organization. And then the third aspect is building a performance culture. When we did the cultural survey last year and we were asking the employees to indicate how they perceive the organization, majority indicated that it's perceived as an organization that is performance-driven. So we continuously evaluate the way we measure performance, we engage them, and continuously improve them. We also, on an annual basis, conduct climate and cultural surveys. We are currently reviewing our culture and values to see if they are in line with the kind of the organization that we are heading. And we have also updated our performance management system. We are re-looking at the organizational design to see if it's the most effective way of delivering on the services. And in terms of the targets for 2010-2011, I will also assume that it's red, but I will just cover two broad aspects where we can speak about pool of ready now skill competence potential leaders, where we want to ensure that we continuously build a pool of leaders such that when we lose competent staff, we know that we also have other competent staff that can succeed them. And then the second aspect, measurable performance by engaged and motivated staff who receive fair and equitable results. What we're trying to articulate there is that there should be a relationship between performance management as well as the reward system. So we work jointly with the staff in terms of ensuring that there's no gap between the two. And then the last aspect of our work is finance and administration, which has got the responsibility of ensuring that there is sound corporate governance. There's an alignment between our financial resources as well as our strategic objectives. And in terms of how it's funded, the first aspect is to look at the productivity grant. And you will notice that I have put comparison between the 2 years. The difference between the first and the second year is 6% increase in terms of the grant. And then in terms of turnaround solution, which is the social plan intervention, it's the one that we hope will increase significantly because of the demand in the market. In the current financial year, based on the limited funding, we couldn't even meet the demands of the market. And what we will be able to report is a situation where we exceeded target for the current financial year. So that has necessitated ensuring that we improve on funding for the social plan intervention. And then with regard to workplace challenge, the funding is sitting around 8 million and it's going to be stable. While other income, we are hoping that through partnerships that we are trying to secure, we will improve income from other sources by about 10%. 10% of our funding will be from sources other than the government sources. And then in terms of percentage, if we look at the year 2009-2010, what that graph clearly illustrates is that 42% of our funding comes from the government grant, which is voted by Parliament, while 42% in 2010 is the turnaround solution funding as a result of improvement, while on the other hand, workplace challenge, which is funded by Department of Trade and Industry, was about 11%, and we've achieved 5% from other sources. While on the other hand, when you look at 2010-2011, we expect the picture to change with 50% of the funding of the total revenue for the organization coming from the social plan funding. In terms of the expenditure, what you will also be able to see is the fact that there's a relationship between the demand for our program as well as the level of funding. Most of the funding will go towards the work that we are doing for social plan, which is a turnaround solution. And the second biggest chunk will relate to value chain, a portion of which is funded by DTI and the remainder funded through the grant. And the third is organizational productivity solution, which gets funding from a government grant as well as other external sources. So there is a good relationship between the size of our programs as well as the level of funding. So that takes us to the end of our presentation. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. CEO, and now it's time for questions, members. Questions, clarifications from both the department and productivity SA. Honorable Low.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will start with the last one of Productivity SA. Productivity SA claims to assist companies who are in distress and to facilitate the process of training. Thus, when we look at trained people, some, if not most of them, happen not to be employed. Here follows the question. The training given by people the training given to people. What is the level of competencies and workplace readiness of these trainees? That's the first one. To what level can the trainees be employed to give credibility of the training received? Does government utilize these trained trainees to the tune of employing them? If so, in which sector, and what is the retention level of these people? If not, why not? And why train people for the sake of statistics instead of training them for the greater long-term retention based on expertise, etc., which happens to be a great shortage, according to the DG, on labor? The next question I will leave for the follow-up questions is based on the department itself. Are you happy to with that?
No, just go on with the question. Or you don't want to ask it now? Okay. No, just ask questions for both the yeah, for the department.
Thank you. Thank you, DG, for your presentation. You happen to mention during your presentation that I've made notes of four categories in terms of the professionals that you mentioned. The first one you mentioned is the civil engineers, the chartered accountants, the doctors, and specialists. Now, you did mention that these are actually the shortages and the challenges that you experience because of not having these specialists. Are these not the exact people who actually were left or who left our shores because of cadre deployment? I was just wondering. That's my first question. And because, you know, it's very interesting that we've got a shortage on these people, and yet we are rich in universities and technicons in South Africa. For a moment, I pause and wonder whether our universities and technicons, whether they don't produce these people. Because as far as I'm concerned, on an annual basis, we do get people who do qualify in these categories that you mentioned. However, I must also say that the only thing that does lack is the experience. And as we all sit here today, somewhere along the line, we were all given an opportunity in our lives in order to experience and also to develop the expertise. My question to you is, at what stage then, if it's only based on the basis of the expertise, will those newcomers, at what stage will they also be able to actually make their mark in terms of the experiences and stuff like that? I'll stop there for now.
Thank you, Honorable Anya Gemba.
Thank you very much. To the department. On inspection and enforcement, I think we have been talking about this. Professionalization of the inspectors for quite some time. And I don't get a sense as to what have we done? Is there something that we have done in order to realize this? Because inspection and enforcement is a challenge. We all know that's a challenge. And I think the DG, when he came to brief us last month, also spoke of a blue car, you see, which will have to, green cars. With the stoplight on the top. So then the point for me is that a way of trying to enforce the findings of the inspectors in a way which is the same as what the traffic cops does? Because
the operation of the traffic cops that if I'm driving 100 in an area of 60, there's a ticket, and then there's a time frame, and then if I don't pay, then I go to court. Is it what you are looking at as a department in that area? I'm raising this because of the challenges in the different industries where one has been exposed. That's one question. The second question is on public employment services, Sam. You spoke of different, in fact, of trying to bring, I assume, different sections in different labor legislations, which talk to employment services. Because you mentioned of the Skills Development Act. Assuming that these public employment services are in place, I mean, the bill comes to Parliament and then it went through, are you then intending to have these services throughout the country at the labor center that the department already has currently? On labor policy, I think the details of the presentation left it give details to that. On the code of conduct, you just mentioned one on HIV. The code of conduct that as a department you intend to look at. And I assume there are areas of challenge that make the department to look at that. But I think my submission says that even Schedule 8, there are challenges in Schedule 8. There are areas that are not necessarily clear there. And that's raising this Schedule 8 as a point for the department to think about, because I know that it's not in our plan now in terms of amendments in the labor legislation. But I'm raising as a point to say that it's one area that, in moving forward, I think the department needs to look at. Let me stop there.
Honorable Nyakemba, Honorable Khumalo.
Thanks, Chair President. Firstly, to Productivity SA. Given the information that you got only two regional offices, which is KZN and Cape Town, while you have a lot of responsibilities to focus on SA representation, I just want to get an understanding as to how are you going to respond to the government priorities that you mentioned earlier on in terms of networking on other various provinces. Hence, you have two regional offices. Two is that you said you got more than 586 jobs that you have already created. I just want to get an understanding as to on which sectors are these jobs created. On Department of Labor, the issue of employment and for EIS is in crisis, of which you all understand. I just want to understand that on the labor tenants, the enforcement, how it will be done, because it is mentioned that the basic conditions of employment will be amended. But I just want to get the sense as to how enforcement will be done there, taking into account the crisis that you already know that they are taking place into that asset. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Khumalo. Honorable Ellis.
Thank you, Chairperson. Couple of questions to DG of Labor and some of the Labor Department officials. I just want to know the vision of the Department of Labor. The DG spoke about it having changed, and I'm just wondering when the change happened. Did I miss it earlier, or is it just happening now in this financial year that we're now changing the vision? It's quite an interesting change. It speaks about investment, economic growth, employment creation, and so on, and that sounds good. I'm just wondering when the change occurred. On page 13, well, slide 25, in terms of the strategic plan, you've got all SEF factories successfully managed to be viable and sustainable enterprises. 70% of goods and services accounted for. Just wondering why the goal is 70% and not 100%. I mean, are there goods that are going missing, or am I misunderstanding that point completely there? Then to Mr. Cataldas, he did this section on slide 28 about the Employment Equity Act. This is a strategic plan for 5 years, 2010 to 2015. I'm just wondering when we're going to do this Employment Equity Act amendment. I turned 40 yesterday, and in 2015 I'm going to be 45, so it's quite a long time. I'm just wondering if we're going to do it in the next year, or maybe only in 5 years' time. Just, I think it's two more quick ones. This labour broking amendments to the Labour Relations Act, and I understand to the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. Often this labour broking debate is like Alice in Wonderland. I went to that Alice in Wonderland film recently, and when Alice falls down that hole, she doesn't know what she's going to find down there. You know, and the labour broking thing we made a lot of progress on in this committee over the last year, but now I see. It seems that contract work, subcontracting, outsourcing, and lots of other things have been dragged into this debate, which I don't know if they were there in the beginning. We had long discussions about labour breaking. But are we now going to amend things with all subcontractors in the country? Are we going to be changing the way people are allowed to do outsourcing? It's quite a shopping list now that we seem to be sitting with when it was initially just labour breaking that we were dealing with. And then my final question for the department, Mr. Bunny said in the beginning of his presentation that an additional 300 million would be necessary to run this department effectively, but when he concluded his presentation, he said he needs an additional 1 billion to deliver decisively on its mandate. There's quite a difference. Is it the 300 million that you need, or is it the 1 billion that you need? I'm just seeking clarity. I'm not quite sure. It's quite a big difference there. And then just a question to Productivity SA. We've got an acting, perhaps to the chairperson of the board, we've got an acting CEO. How long do we anticipate that before we appoint a permanent CEO? And the new board, there are quite a lot of new faces. And I'm just wondering, are you happy that the skill set of the new board is fitting with your mandate and what you need to deliver? We met the previous board last year, and we made some comments to them about whether or not they had the skills in the committee. And I'm just wondering if you are happy now that you have the skills in the new board to be able to deliver what you need to. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson.
Are you saying it's your birthday today?
Yes,
or yesterday? Okay, we will sing for you after the session. Oh, okay, no, and Ma Alina.
You're getting old.
Yes, Honorable Lalina.
Thank you, Chair. The Department of Labor, I think we are part of the law enforcement group. But when we look around here, Comrade Minister, Honorable Minister, you don't really see some of the law enforced by the same department. If I look here, there's no gender equality, so you turn around, you tend to ask yourself, where is this employment equity? How are we balancing the demographics and all those things? It doesn't reflect. So I hope Mr. Manier and Minister will work on that. Mr. Manier, Minister will ensure that this, some of those laws are followed. Demographics are horrible. I think we need to accept that and they need to be corrected. And gender equality is a serious issue. And when you listen to Productivity South Africa speaking, it's like they are doing the same thing with us. But nevertheless, but I just want to check with the department. I'll go straight to the budget because I've been listening to a lot of things which they have said. And I should think, I appreciate that some of the Labor Relations and Basic Condition of Employment Act are going to be amended and help the interpretation, particularly on subcontracting, outsourcing. Maybe Honorable Ollis has never been a worker on the ground like I have been, testing exactly what is this outsourcing and the subcontracting. Maybe if the department is going to shape up and ensure that everything is understandable, misinterpretation, open for interpretation is going to close, that will help. And I should think that's what part I want to appreciate from the department. That shows that we are actually taking care of the population in this country and trying to protect them from those other forms of employment and how a typical worker has been treated. I should think if that can work out to understand, to me, that's fine. But talking about the shortage of funds, Director, is that I should think it will be better if you say, within my funds, which are very limited, these are my priorities, so that this is what I will achieve by this period. We understand you don't have money, but within there, you need to show us this is what I will do by this period. It will help us. Your budget talk to us that way so that we are able to assist. And you also talk about shortage of CAs. I don't know whether CAs are the only people to deal with finances. It's many a times not the case. CA will finalize, will analyze, will give the legal perspective. But accountants, I think we've got a lot of accountants. And you can't employ all CAO in your department because you won't afford to pay them. Maybe your funds will go further down. But I should think we don't have your strategic plan to say where you needed all the CAs, how many accountants, so that at least you balance. You can't have all experts because CA will be, chartered accountants will be very expensive for the department with your limited resources. Unfortunately, as the Department of Labor, we must be more understanding that if the threshold of tax is being pulled down to sustain livelihood for those who are poor and they don't pay tax, so the income into us is very little. And how we see that, unless we increase more on the taxes, because government rely 100% on taxes. So if the threshold is giving the space we are giving to give a breathing space to the poor, this will be the result that the funds will be very limited. But the how part of how we as the department we prioritize so that we are working. We can't do everything at the same time, I agree. That your budget looks very rosy, but it's not everything we can do. Priorities will have to be taken into account. Employment reduction on your purpose, page 3. You are saying, I was not clear when you were trying to stress that to regulate the labor market, the relationship between employer and employee, is that what you are focusing on? You stress on that. Maybe I was taking this holistically from the report, but when you were presenting, you then confused me to say employer-employee relationships, that's where you're going to stress. But I've seen your report talking about protections, this. But how you stress it, that's what it confused me. I don't know whether it's how you've written it. So I should think, if you can just clarify me, it's not that serious. Compliance through enforcement of labor legislation. I should think that last time we debated it, that even what the Honorable Olive just raised, the labor brokers. In actual fact, we don't have legislation on that. So if we really enforce the law and follow up, we could have seen that those employers who were using this 198 as one legislation which they can use. That's why we need interpretation then, Comrade Alice. That because of that openness on that one, we are here where we are debating labor brokers. So I'm happy that you are talking about it, that it will ensure compliance through. But you even on your report, it's not clear how you're going to follow up, whether you're going to send inspectors, if you can help me to understand. I should think I'm asking this question and I asked it last time. I don't know, they're unskilled. Sometimes we forget that we talk about the unskilled labor and all those things, but we are not checking at the prior learning. And you are not checking at the experience people have. And this got an impact even in the company. We tend to ignore that in our legislation we are talking about the prior learning and the experience people have. They must be taken to a certain level. But when you talk about unskilled, we are not saying unskilled people, experienced people, and what we realize that people have from the prior learning. Because I can't work 20 years. That time we were not allowed as black people to do a lot of other training and acquiring other skills. We are forced to do teaching and nursing and very few lawyers. So that thing, I cannot say I'm not skilled if I work for 20 years in a department. And I'm still training. I always argue that I used to train managers, and I've never been a manager. They will just bring somebody who cannot read and write. And those people have run this country for some time. So I think we need to also, as we talk about unskilled, and check on the experiences of the people and ensure that is being taken care of. I don't have a lot for you, I should think. On the evaluation of inspection and enforcement services, evaluations, did we ever evaluate? Because I don't think the uniform of the inspectors, like that Ngekemba was making reference to what we were told last time, will make the difference. We did have inspectors before, but these inspectors, they used to come and go, and nothing happens. I think what we need to say here is that what difference are we going to make not to get them cars and uniform? It's not going to work. They can come there with green, we'll see. I was sitting in the health and safety committee. We called the inspector. The person have been there. This, and nothing happened, and some of those workers, we've got more workers who are injured in the workplaces because the inspectors had failed to do their job. But we are not getting the gist of what is it that you're going to change to ensure that there is a difference now on the quality, not the quantity, of having too many inspectors who are going to be just green in the yellow card and you don't know what is their job. So I should think that's what is missing on that report. If I have read it properly, unless I'm wrong, you can correct me. I should think the review of the employment equity, even if we are talking about review, I'm not sure that companies are complying. And what are we doing? I should think Mr. at that corner will say, me and him, we went to certain companies with a lot of complaints we are writing. Nothing has happened.
all the reports of the employment equity, I don't think we are reading and analyzing them. At the beginning, they were not. Because some of them will find that it remains the same. And workers refuse to sign what the employers have said. And the plan is not moving. There's no upward mobility. There's no life in the plan. But just because they submit within that day, that's what is happening. I should think Mr. Mkhalipa can bear with me on that. We have seen certain directors with him to check as to whether, what is the intention? Is just to ensure that this department has requested this and will submit on this day. But what is the outcome of that output? Nothing. Believe me, there's nothing. I was sitting in one committee for 10 years. I'd never achieved one thing there. And everything remained the same all the years. I just think we need to revisit it on the basis that what are the findings? I have seen the last report, I never seen the last year report maybe, of the commissioner. It was terrible. There was no training, there was no education, there was no upward mobility. White old men were still sitting on top. No females, no other colors, no other demographics were getting there. Blacks are still where they are because they are, that's why I was stressing on skills and unskills and experience. They're still there. When you ask why women are not put in the high position, they said it's because a woman is a dependent worker to the husband. When I transfer Alina to Cape Town, must take, the husband will never go. That's why women are not getting there. What is it that we are doing to help? Because honestly, employers are not, I don't know what the review is based on, but there are so many problems which we encountered on the skills development. And I'm going to finish now. I don't know. I meant occupational health and safety. I don't know what is going to be amended. I tried to read on the report. I couldn't find what specifically. Because the reality is that on our policy, we are saying, if you believe this workplace is harmful or what I'm doing is harmful to my health, I must not do it. The law says that. The policy of our country says that. I know we're very famous in ILO on that one, and we influence the whole world to take it from South Africa. But the reality is that not refusing to take reasonable instruction? And if the inspectors are still not doing their job, those workers will still suffer. Maybe we need to revisit that when you amend. I don't know what you're going to really amend, whether it's the whole thing. But that part, that if you find this harmful, you've got the right to refuse to do that job. If you find this step later, no, I can't climb in it all four. And you say, I can't climb here. And they say, no, you've refused to take reasonable instruction, and you are dismissed. And you are gone. And somebody climbs. So I should think that part needs to be revisited. What happens if you have refused? It doesn't say what I must do, which I find it very problematic. The last one on the protection of vulnerable workers. You said you've got a labor school in Devon. When are you going to extend the school? Since I grow, I went to the labor school in Devon. When are you going to extend this to other provinces so that at least this thing that the trainings are 2 days, 3 days can stop? We have labor school where we can say in this province, when you do this, we'll do that, we'll do this, we'll do that. Even the Devon one, we need to revisit. What are they training people at labor school? Are we just pumping money? What is the output against the income we have put there? So I should think we need to check that. It has been there for ages. I attended that once, but I can't recall whether I can give the output of what I've learned there. So I should think Department of Labor also need to reevaluate, monitor that, check whether it's still feasible for us to have that labor school, and when are we extending to other provinces, so that at least other provinces can have such training so that we can be able to fight the unemployment situation. Lastly, Chair, is the one for Productivity South Africa. I'm finishing. Productivity South Africa, I'm very concerned and I'm confused. I don't know whether the minister or the director one day will put me in a very clear picture as to what is really your responsibility, how you help us in changing South Africa, in making sure that the workers, the employers in this country, because I don't hear you talking about this multinational who are
Ms. Yuthi, as you just talk management, how you help workers on the ground, how you help people. Flexibility is the name of the game. People have been misused. I'm not sure what you are really on. Maybe it's me, so I won't be going too much. But I'll ask on the to create sustainable level of employment. Where, how, the helper, that was not there. I read your report up front, is still giving synopsis. It doesn't give us the gist of what is really you are doing on this create sustainable level of employment. And what is different to what the Department of Labor is doing. Should we keep you or let's put this back into the Department of Labor so that it can do that? I mean, that 42%, maybe if we build our own schools, we can do it better. But if the department and everybody, maybe it's only me, doesn't understand, then it's fine. But I'm not sure how you do that. How to prevent unemployment. We're just coming out with a framework in the country. How are we going to prevent unemployment? Where is your own framework to help us? There has been that agreement, which I don't think Minister had ever worked. The Growth and Development Summit, how we create jobs. What are your statistics? Where? Which sectors? Because it's not clear whether you are talking about your own internal thing or in the companies only. Because on the shop floor, I can't tell about anything, which I've seen Productivity South Africa is doing. I had never seen that. And I've been asking Papa, but in whole continent, I've been going with Papa and asking them, what is it? So I should think if maybe you help me, I will understand. The retention of job, where, how? When we are struggling now that everybody is losing job, unemployment situation is escalating, how you do that? How you help that retention? When we see companies reducing people, particularly who are old, which they must retain to help and develop the skills and help those who are coming into the labor market. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Alina Nyakemba. You want to add something?
Yes, Chair. Just to productivity. In the presentation, they made reference to skills development facilitators and training managers, training workers, that was not clear to me, because your skills development facilitators are in terms of the Skills Development Act. And then the whole range of training of workers, I think, is managed in terms of the Skills Development Act. How do we intend to do this training of workers that you are talking about? How do you bring in the mandate that you have, the Skills Development Facilitators? Can you a little bit clarify us in that area? Thank you very much, sir. That was the only one.
Okay, thank you, members. I will give the department the opportunity to respond to all the questions that have been directed to the department. And after that, it will be productivity essay. Clarity, DJ. I listened to all the presentations. There is nothing that comes out clear in terms of responding to the priorities of the government. I know that you have referred to them, but it is important for us as the committee to know that this is what the department can do in terms of responding to those priorities. And I think the question around the the amount of, or that the amount that you referred to as the amount that would assist the department to meet the requirements. It would have been much better if it was as you were presenting its department to tell, I mean, its entity to tell us what is that you have identified in terms of shortcomings of the budget to make it difficult for you to achieve, for instance, CCMA. Let's talk about CCMA. Let me just say, DJ, I assume that when you draw up your threat plan or the overall threat plan of the department, all your entities are with you, and all these entities are supposed to be working towards the achieving of that overall threat plan of the department. And when they report at the end of the day to you, they should be saying, we were able to do that because of ABCD. As you are drawing that threat plan, you are in a position to know that, to say, for instance, let's talk about the inspectorate that we are so interested in. To say, we can only buy so much cars this year. For instance, in Mpumalanga, we'll give them two. Our wish is that we could have 10 in each province. But because the budget constraints, we will only be able to give so much and train so much or get the caliber of inspectors or that we need in this level because these are the budget constraints. So it is not clear for us. We are not able as the committee to say or to go back to the treasurer and say, look, the amount that was granted to the Department of Labor, Department of Labor is not going to be able to respond to priorities of the government this year. What they can do, they can only go so far. So it would be very easy for us and clear to everybody that what the president has announced as priorities of the government, the Department of Labor will not be able to contribute in those priorities. Or we should know as early as now that the Department of Labor can go that far unless the treasurer can add so much, because if we want to achieve these priorities, we must have A, B, C, D. So I think that's what is it's not clear. And really, I don't believe that these entities, they sit in the corner and just decide what is our threat plan for this year. I think there's something, there are terms of reference that they should be looking at before they say this is the threat plan for the year. And amongst those terms of references is the priorities of the government. That's what we are looking at. So you want the president, when he goes back next year and say, the Department of Labor was able to do A, B, C, D, or the Department of Labor was not able to do anything or any contribution, but that should be very clear as to why the Department of Labor was not able to contribute. But if it's not clear when you talk and what is your strategic objective in regards to the priorities. Because these priorities, they are not short-term.
you should be having your short-term and your long-term objectives. And it should be clear to us that in those priorities, this is your short-term. By the end of the year, you think as the Department of Labor, you would have done so much. And then the rest, as you know, it should be very clear so that we are very clear, as was stated here, what is that we are looking at the end of the day from the Department of Labor. So thank you.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. If you allow me, there is an approach this team here so that we continue with our team effort. So I'm going to ask from my extreme left, Sam, to pick up all the PES questions, Sianda to pick up all the IES questions, Les, and so on, the people doing their specialties, and the CFO to talk to some of the budget issues that have been raised. And then I'll pick up the difference at the end. Thanks, Chair.
Sam, DG. I think there was a question from Honorable Nyakemba around the intention of the Employment Services Bill. My answer is that yes, Honorable Nyakemba, the intention is to integrate and make sure that all our employment services functions are located within a single house or a home. That is why we need that legislation. And the whole idea is to link precisely to what the Honorable Chairperson is raising. For instance, making sure that our impact on interventions can be measured. Let me give you an example around employment creation and the link and synergies between what we're doing. I mean, with the loss of or transfer of skills development to education, it went with assets, resources, obligations, and so on. And the department in the process transferred 9 billion rand, which was almost six times the budget of the department, which means that in terms of the employment creation interventions that were being done in the training of unemployed, etc., those things have now moved across and should be looked at from the other department because they went with the resources that you used to go with that. But the whole idea is to make sure that in the placement services, we are able to link with colleagues in the Department of Education so that as we train people, we are able to make sure that they are directed in employment. The whole idea in the Department of Labor has always been to make sure that the people who go through this program end up in employment, be it a formal employment, self-employment, or they work in projects such as cooperatives that will make sure that they can earn sustainable income. So this is what we are trying to do in terms of that bill. With the link with the UIF, the example that one can give relates to the large number of people that are in the queues. And our intention is to make sure that, and I think we had a debate in the last meeting, I mean the last presentation to the Portfolio Committee, around making sure that where people are retrenched and there are jobs available, instead of people remaining on queues and continue to earn unemployment insurance funds because of the credits they have, you are able to find a mechanism that will make sure that we are able to speed up the process of placing them in those vacancies that are emerging. And in that way, we will be able to deal with these problems of skills shortage in the country because in some cases, we have people who have the skills and we have jobs that cannot be filled because there are no skills. And if you can maintain that link, I think we'll be able to deal with some of the criticisms and some of the examples around, I mean, there's a debate around the brain drain, etc. But the whole idea is to facilitate that impact and the referrals. There was a second question relating to
sheltered employment and the 70%. There are three things that we are looking at in terms of the target that we set. Yes, we must be the first to admit that there is a small element of some of the goods that are being manufactured that we need to put in serious measures to make sure that every item that is manufactured is properly accounted for, is sold, the price is right, and we're able to make sure that it is accounted for. The second element associated with the 70% is that some of the products that are manufactured from the people that we sell these products to, the payment has not been to the level of satisfaction. I think from our annual report, we did highlight those areas where there are some government departments that are still owing the sheltered employment factories funds, which is the reason why the growth has been impacted upon. And the third element, which resulted in a matter of emphasis or a qualification last year, has to do with how you cost the products that are still manufactured. There's a difference between a finished product and the materials that you bought. What the AG wanted us to do, or when they said some of the items are not properly accounted for, is that if you have a table that has got a top but it does not have a leg, that table, if you can't cost it and make it and say this is a finished product. And we are now having to develop formulas that will say if this product is manufactured up to this level, what is its cost, so that when you do your inventory, you are able to say the total stock that we have in sheltered employment factories amounts to this much. So I think that the 70% was put in that context. Maybe if the way we phrased it is misleading, we will adjust it accordingly. But that was the essence of what we're trying to say. I think, DG, those were the two questions that related to that. And I think the CEO wanted to add on the sheltered employment.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Perhaps let me combine two questions from Honorable Ellis and you, Chairperson, with regards to particularly your emphasis on entities. And the direct question is, to what extent are entities contributing to the government's overall strategic plan? If you take sheltered employment factories as one of the entities falling under the jurisdiction of the Department of Labor, in the strategic plan that the DG presented, there's a projection in the plan of sheltered employment factories creating employment opportunities for the next financial year of 500 employees. It's part of the strategic plan. And for people with disabilities, a section of our society that's completely marginalized, part of the strategic plan that's in the Department of Labor strategic plan, and therefore key to the overall strategic government plans. So that's one aspect of the contribution. But that creation of those particular jobs is dependent upon government departments, in particular, procuring about 30% of their orders from sheltered employment factories, which is not the case at the moment. So there's a potential to create jobs, contribute to the overall strategic plans of government, but on condition that government departments allocate 30% of their orders to sheltered employment factories. The second aspect, again, which relates to your question, Honorable Chair, it relates to training. The DG indicated in the strategic plan of the department that there's a potential that we could create a center of excellence, for people with disabilities, where companies could utilize those factors as a repository to employ and source people with disabilities in the mainstream and open economy, which currently is not the case. The government is unable to meet its employment equity targets in terms of people with disabilities. Neither is the private sector. And therefore, Chairperson, I'm insignificant as the numbers may be, but to the extent that we are an entity, we have got a potential currently of increasing employment, say, over the next period, say, over 2 to 3 years, because the capacity that exists in all of the 12 sectors is the capacity of 3,000 employees. And currently, in this next financial year, we're saying 500 employees that could be employed on condition that government procures over 30% of its orders from those particular factories. So that's a key strategic contribution to the State of the Nation address, the five areas as identified by the President. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Respond to questions on inspection and enforcement services. The first question is on professionalization of the inspectorate, which we've been talking about for quite some time now. I have reported in this house in terms of what has been done so far. We have identified the categories of inspectors, which are generalist, principal, and specialist inspectors. We have developed job profiles in this regard, with the salary levels determined for all these categories. And also the job evaluation has been done, which indicates what are the requirements for a special category, what is the salary for this category. That has been done. Hence, I was saying in my presentation, now we will be looking at implementing the professionalization based on the funding available. But again, if I may add here, we have already appointed in some provinces the inspectors for UI. The UI payroll auditors are in place, not in all provinces, but there are some provinces who have undergone the process of recruitment and selection. We also have the DG review, which is currently conducted at head office level, where we're looking at bringing all these areas of enforcement under one umbrella, which is the inspection and enforcement services. I agree that probably the vehicles and the uniform won't make that much difference. It will heighten the visibility of inspectors in terms of ensuring that inspectors do have vehicles to reach workplaces. But over and above that the professionalization is an attempt to ensure that the inspectors make a difference in terms of not just going into a workplace and do an exercise of just ticking on the checklist, but doing full inspection in terms of spending even a week in one workplace to ensure that they go through the books, they inspect the work that the employer in terms of compliance for all labor legislation that we administer. And that is an attempt to do that with the professionalization. The second question is around enforcement of legislation on labor tenants on farms. We have here a sectoral determination for farm workers, which we have to enforce. As we know that the sectoral determination determines and sets the minimum wages for farm workers, it also set conditions, other conditions of employment in terms of the accommodation, which must have running water, lighting, and all of that. And they are allowable deductions in this regard. So we will be enforcing the sectoral determination in this regard on farm workers.
On the OHS regulations, we will be amending and reviewing regulations on the construction regulations, the general safety, the lifts and escalators, and passenger conveyance equipment. We will be looking at reviewing these regulations. In some of these, the process is already underway in terms of presenting some of these to the Advisory Council for Occupational Health and Safety. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I take it that what Honorable Nyakemba raised around the Code of Good Practice was a comment. That one, we bring it in because of this discussion in the ILO around the HIV/AIDS in the world of work, and it's going to be an international standard. It's a recommendation, not a convention, but there may be issues arising from that where we need to align our Code of Good Practice and technical assistance guidelines to strengthen our instruments in that area. The Schedule 8 is on dismissals in the LRA. You said we must think about that, so we don't have it on the table at the moment. But it would be useful to understand what are some of the concerns with regard to that. The employment equity amendments, possibly before you are 42 years of age, we will bring a bill to Parliament, not when you are 30. The LRA amendments, I think this issue of labor broking, subcontracting, contract work is part of the same chain of atypical employment that needs to be addressed. And we have discussed this before, so it is not something new. It's part of the same thing. Labor broking comes sometimes as a result of subcontracting or contracting out or whatever the case may be. The issue of unskilled labor, Honorable Alina, what we have reported in the strategic plan is that we will investigate unskilled labor in the country. We have now sectoral determinations, but there are unskilled workers that fall outside of that, and we want to investigate the extent of that so that we also extend protection for those workers. In fact, it may constitute a national flaw for all workers in this country, so that nobody falls through the net. And these are the most vulnerable workers that are in this category of unskilled work. So we'll do that investigation. And then a report, obviously there will be public hearings because we're looking at the sectoral determination, there will be public hearings, and from there a report would be compiled that would go to the Employment Conditions Commission to then advise the minister on what protections should be extended to this category of workers. The review of the issue around employment equity, the DG review seeks to enforce substantive compliance. So it is not just getting a report from a company. It is looking inside of those reports and inside those companies what is actually happening. So there's an analysis done of the statistics that they provide. Remember, we don't prescribe quotas and targets. We are monitoring what they report to us against their own plan, their own employment equity plan. And what we have found in some of these DG reviews is that those plans are defective. So we then give a recommendation through the DG to them to say, fix your plan in these areas. It is in these areas that it is defective, and that is why you're not achieving the outcome in terms of the employment equity legislation. We find in these DG reviews that they don't consult with workers or place committees with regard to the development of the plan. They don't even consult with them in regard to the report that they submit to the department. So those are the issues that we're looking at. We find that they don't allocate employment equity managers in the workplaces. So the recommendations go around fixing your plan in the first instance, consulting with the workers in the development of your plan and the reports that you submit, submitting your reports on time, and having an employment equity manager. And they will also look at what do they do in terms of skills development within the company. Because people can't be promoted if you don't develop their skills within the workplace. And you find that in the feeder levels in the organization, there's a lack of training there. So people can't move from the skilled technical into the managerial and top positions because they don't train. So that is what the DG review process is about. So we give them recommendations. We then sit with them, agree that they understand the recommendations, and that we also agree the time frames. And sometimes they say, well, we can't make it by then. So we then reach an agreement to say, by then you must fix this problem. And then we monitor that and go back to them and give them feedback again. So that is how we deal with the issue of DG reviews. The issue of strengthening of civil society, the Workers' College KZN, the bulk of the strengthening of civil society funding now goes to the DSELA. Now, we understand that the DSELA does have national reach, that SAMU, based in Cape Town, can send people for training within the DSELA. But we take your point about Workers' College KwaZulu-Natal. We may ask the question whether they should exist, whether it should not just be one national organization with regional facilities to train. But that is something that we can look at. But we understand that the DSELA does have national reach. They don't just operate in Johannesburg, but they are able to also go out. But we need to look at how we can strengthen that. Thank you, Jefferson.
From finances, it wasn't a particular question, but a comment that we should probably make the projects that we are going to fund with the available budget. From slide 35 to 36, there is that information. We will make that information available, except for the compensation of employees, which is stipulated on the slide number 35, and also the transfers and subsidies, also on the same slide. But the project that we are able to fund with the available budget will make that information available.
Chairperson, okay, one of the questions was the issue of experts who left their shores and so on. Let me make it abundantly clear that from where we sit, if we look at the amount and quality of CVs that we receive in the department, we do not have a shortage of capable people. We don't, outside the department, people that want to join the group. In fact, Honorable Member, we've got thick volumes of, when we were interviewing for the COO, for instance, Minister Pando commented about the quality of the people that we're getting. She was surprised at the level of talent out there that is ready to join the public service. It's actually astounding. So we don't have a challenge of people out there to join the department. I was just indicating that in order to strengthen the department, we need those people. But the availability is out there. I mean, as we speak now, Honorable Member, in my email system, I can show you 20 CAs that are ready, available, and want to join the department. In fact, we've been picking and choosing as we speak. The team was sitting a couple of days ago to pick and choose which of the CAs they want. So we don't have a problem of people out there that want to come in and join, and we're working on that. The only constraint in the system is just the processes that are slow because of vetting and all other red tape issues. But in terms of people that want to join the department, no sweat. All the various skills that we require are out there in the marketplace, and I'm quite excited that people want to join the Department of Labor. And which deals with the question of are they, when will they be ready and productive? They are already capable people, skilled people advantage. We've got a mixture. We can pick and choose, trust me. There are young CAs that want to join, and I think it's important to make the point that when a person is a CA already, because they do serve articles, they don't come green, as it were, unlike, for instance, an accountant that would just recently graduated straight from university. A CA would have done some articles, so there is some level of engagement with the commerce. So they don't come totally green, so they can hit the road running. That's why they are such hotcakes, as it were. So honourable members, we don't have that problem of attracting, and I'm quite excited that the Department of Labour is also seen as an employer of choice, just judging by the quality and the number of people that want to join the department. In terms of the enforcement, inspection and enforcement, I think Sian has already made some input, but I'm quite happy, Honourable Chair, to say we've made some progress as well, even on the green cards. As we sit now, with the relationships that the department has with the car manufacturers, we are able to deliver some of these cars in March, as it were. We've spoken to the car manufacturers, they're ready to deliver. So those green cards, very soon the Minister of Labour will be launching them. So just watch the space. We are working very hard to achieve this. How are we going to operate? Traffic cop approach and so on, in terms of what we're trying to do. We're trying to go into that direction, Honourable Member. What is the challenge right now? The law is very cumbersome. The law is asking for permission. This is the problem. The law is asking for permission to do a corrective action. So the body, the thrust of the amendments that are putting through is to remove that permission so that the law is decisive. When you break the law, something must happen to you. So that's the thrust of the amendments. And Honourable Member Alina once said a lot of detail. I think the challenge around the detail is that, for instance, Parliament is a public place. The challenge is that it's not that we don't have the detail. It's just the processes. Here we can just hint which direction we're going. But as soon as we go into the detail, which is contained in the bills and so on, that are busy drafting, we might be breaching processes. Before you know, even before Parliament discusses the matter, it's already out there with the media and all of that. So that's the challenge that we face. But it's not that we don't have detail. We do have it, but we've got processes. And the Minister of Labour will be the one to table the bills to Parliament. And at that point, the Parliament will have the details of what you're talking about. Up until that happens, we'll keep referring to the issues that we're dealing with, but the house and all of that are all contained in the bills that we're drafting, but the Minister of Labour will table that at the appropriate time. I think other questions have been answered. The vision changed in as of 1st of April. What we did in the department as of end of last year, we went into a strategic plan to say how do we make sure that we reposition the department. So we did a new strategy for the department, and that vision is in line with what is in the ENE now, that new vision. So it's a vision that starts to be effective from 1st of April. And then the budget issue, that whether it's 300 million or 1 billion, this department, honourable members, as I said, is totally underfunded. If one looks at the responsibilities that we have, the 300 million is just if you were to look at the budget block by block. Actually, if you were to break it down, at administration level, that's the 300 million we're talking about. If you look at inspection and enforcement, not only are these cars that we need, we also need a lot of gadgets. You know, the inspectors, when they go out to go and investigate, they need a lot of technology to do a whole lot of things, to check the carbon emissions, radiation. We need scintillometers. It's a whole range of technical equipment to be able to do our job. When you go and investigate a chemical explosion, you need some of those chemical engineers to know how to test the various chemical compounds that you come across in the factories. So all of these things require technical equipment and all that in order to execute. So for that to happen, to capacitate inspectors, I mean, when you go and you check the quality of the construction, you want to check the tensile strength of all of these things and so on, you need equipment to do all of these things. So for that, we need a good 100 million on inspection and enforcement. On public employment service, the dream on this one is to ensure that South Africa has got one system where all the vacancies are registered. This is the dream. We want to ensure that all the vacancies are registered, all the work seekers are registered, so that we're able to do the matchmaking. So the first step in terms of what the Honorable Chair was asking, what can you do? That's a dream. But what we'll be able to do this year is to at least work within, we'll start with the department. You would have noticed, Honorable Chair, that in the adverts of the Department of Labor, it's the only department that is very efficient in putting adverts. We do one advert, and we list all the vacancies that are available in the department in one ad. We'll refer you to a system, we'll refer you to a website in the department. That's how you get a blow-up of each one of these vacancies. It's a very efficient way of advertising. This is what we do. Now, this is just a precursor of what we want to do going forward. So we want to build that system to ensure that South Africa as a whole operates in that system. But for now, we'll be able to do the department and some limited government for this year. But up to the point where the bill is passed properly, then we can properly engage the rest of the country. Now, Honorable Chair also asked, what are the three priorities that we have? And Honorable Alina, I think, asked the same question, just so that you are sure that we're not all over. Yes, we've got a plethora of things to do, but we've got three big things, three major things that we think we'll be able to achieve this year. One is the issue of the blitz, the inspectorate visibility. I think, Honorable Chair, this is very important to understand the implication and the impact of this operation. This is an 80-20 operation. The minute these inspectors are out there with their green overalls and cars and so on, that has got a reverberating effect throughout. That ensures that even those that thought that they could get away with it, they must then get the notion that there's no getting away with it. And we're also not playing games, the Honorable Member. We're going to be working very close with unions as well to ensure that we get a lot of information, a lot of intelligence around the abuses that are happening in the workplace. So these blitz are going to happen every month. This is what is going to increase the cost of doing business for us. We're going to, every month there's going to be a blitz. We're going to be targeting different sectors every month. That's what we're going to be doing. So that takes a lot of time, energy, and resources. Secondly, this is public employment service. We are relaunching this public employment service this year. What this means, Honorable Members, is that flowing from the carve-out from the Skills Development Act, we are now going to take the carved-out areas and then do this public employment service bill within that space. This is where we're going to have this portal that Sam was talking about, that is going to have that legislative foundation right there. Now, a lot of work is going to go into this registration of vacancies and all that work that is going to ensure that people that are unemployed and so on are catered for there. And also to create a connection between UIF, compensation, and the integration of the service offerings of the department are going to be centered around PES. And then thirdly, our other focus area is labor law reform. We are busy in terms of making sure that we make these amendments through this year. I can say at least we know that the LRA this year should come to pass, and maybe also partly dealing with the issue of what is it that we're doing in terms of dealing with the government priorities. The labor, the amendments in the LRA is one of the ways in which we're dealing with this thing, like Les has already alluded to this, because within there we're going to be dealing very decisively with the issue of labor broking. One of the government priorities is decent work agenda. Around the decent work agenda, there's a whole range of things that we're doing. The inspection and enforcement is an input to ensure that there is indeed decent work agenda. The whole issue of tightening up on the labor laws, the labor tenant issues and all of that are all the legislative amendments that we are doing to ensure that the government achieves the decent work agenda. Government is also got a priority issue of health. So all our activities in occupational health and safety in the COID are all aimed, are all in the slides. I don't want to repeat the presentation. They're all contained in the presentation here to say what is it that we're doing to ensure that our work is aligned to government priorities. Recognition of prior learning. Honorable members, this is a very important priority for this department. In fact, we even recently issued a circular in this department to remind managers that the issue of RPL is a serious issue for us in this department. We make the point that the Employment Equity Act is very clear that a suitably qualified person is not only formal qualification, but you also have RPL issue with previous experience, also have potential to rise to the occasion in a limited time. So all of that is a circular to that effect to remind managers that we do that. What we now do as well is to ensure that in the department we also have competency-based assessment so that you don't penalize people because they don't have an actual qualification. People must be assessed in terms of what they can do. So that ensures that you match the issue of capability to deliver despite not having a qualification and so on. So it's a matter that we are taking very seriously. Right, and then the issue of the quality of inspectorate and so on, what is it that are doing there? I think Honorable Member Alina spoke to this. The response here is that these, I think for us, because obviously South Africa is a constitutional state, we operate within a legislative framework. So the only way to give teeth to the inspectorate is to tighten the law. That's what we're doing. And it is our view in the department that that's the only solution. If you were to leave things to market forces, nothing is going to happen. So we need to firm up the law. And again, I'll be short on detail because I don't want to breach processes in terms of what are the things that are doing. But at a high level, we are removing all the slowness in the legislation. Can't go into detail, honourable members, and hope you will bear with me because I'll be preempting a lot of discussions which must happen at the appropriate time with Parliament. I think I've covered the things that some of the colleagues here probably missed out on, and I'm sure if there's anything else that's left out, we're willing to respond to that. But in conclusion, honorable members, the issue of women representation as well. It's a serious issue for the department. In fact, I have announced in the department that the two positions that are vacant, which is the COO, there will be women. We've told the men they mustn't bother applying. They know this. On the corporate services, there will be at some point an appointment. It will be a woman. They've been told that they must not be ambitious. It's going to be women position. So we're very, very, very decisive on these matters, and we're very committed to ensure that we lead by example. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, DJ. At least I'm happy to hear that we are putting a lot of work around the inspectorate, and I'm glad to hear that you link, because at times we don't understand the question of inspectorate with decent jobs and labor broking, even if we're not talking about it, but all these are linked.
So it will be important in the process of tightening that law, Minister, that you don't only focus on the on these sophisticated things. It's fine. It's part of the of the package. But the people who are here, who are working on the roads, the construction workers, your inspectors must be in a position to do something and not go there and look for the books that you are going to be told the office is in Johannesburg. They must be in a position to act on the spot without workers losing anything. So, and the domestic workers as well. So I think that that will assist a lot and it will make a difference in terms of protection of workers and decent work for everybody. Thank you. So it will be labor productivity, the questions by the labor productivity. I assume the department is done. Yes, thank you. No, we will come up, we'll make follow-up questions after the labor answering of these questions because,
Thank you, Madam Chair. Honorable Chairperson, we will answer questions in the following sequence. The operational part, the acting CEO will answer, and then the ones directed to the board, I will answer. Thank you.
And the first question was relating to training, whether we train for the purpose of training and whether we train people that are unemployed. In response to that, our training is linked to the programs that we're having. And the nature of our training would make it impractical to train somebody who's unemployed because it's practical, it's measurement-based, and it's relevant to that environment in which the person is working. So the training happened in the form of the programs that we're having. For an instance, in turnaround solutions, we train workers to ensure that they understand the key drivers within their business environment so that when they engage management, they engage management from a strong position, which is a position of knowledge. And then with regard to SMMEs, we train existing SMMEs to enable them to be formalized and to be able to be to come up with measurements in their work environment so that they can evaluate improvement as a result of productivity interventions that they will be implementing. And then in terms of workplace challenge, the training is to ensure that the workers are equipped with measurements that relate to quality, speed, cost, and morale. And then with regard to the issue of representation at the regional, at other regions, because we are currently having offices in Western Cape as well as KZN, with the corporate office being in Midrand. We believe that we would rather make a bigger impact by being where we are and relying on partnerships. As indicated, that our focus is on partnerships. It gives you have a more compelling case if you request additional funding based on the fact that you are going to increase your targets, as opposed to using money to build offices. However, if one looks at our statistics, especially the last year's annual report, one would be able to realize that we have a good regional representation. So we are covered in all the provinces. And what is also praiseworthy regarding our partnership at provincial level is that in spite of the fact that we do not have an office in Limpopo, as well as Mpumalanga. During the productivity month, there were lots of activities in these regions where they were able to do some work. So we believe in do-it-yourself approach as far as productivity awareness is concerned, because our goal is to inspire a productive and competitive South Africa. And then with regard to the position of the acting CEO, the chairperson will be able to respond to that. And then with regard to our ability to change South Africa, especially the cause of the workers, I will ask my colleagues to briefly indicate how the two programs are benefiting the workers. Silo will tell us briefly how workers have benefited from workplace challenge, and Mzonga will briefly indicate how workers have benefited from social plan interventions.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and also just to acknowledge the Minister, Honorable Members of Parliament. In terms of what Workplace Challenge does, basically, it is in basically to benefit the workers. It is first and foremost to ensure the issue of increasing productivity, but then ensuring that the gains of productivity, which is the profits, that is the revenue that's being generated because of productivity that's being increased, gets equitably shared, either in terms of schemes that are called productivity gain sharing, or in terms of bonuses or increase in wages. So that is one way. The second way, which we've always put as part of the condition, is to ensure that the companies that we intervene in, we don't just intervene in those companies for the sake of ensuring that they grow and the investors or shareholders are the ones that benefit, but to ensure that once these companies do generate more income, they are able to invest, and we make it as one of the preconditions that we want to see one of the results once we have intervened and we have improved the conditions in the company, that employment creation becomes one of the outputs that we can measure and we can always report back to the sponsors. Those are the two major things. Despite the fact that first and foremost, when you intervene in the company, is to ensure that you basically stabilize the company and ensure that the retention in terms of employment is realized. That is a given, but the other two are very, very important. Lastly, it's the empowerment of employees. First and foremost, workplace challenges. Important objective has always been that employees have to have a meaningful input in terms of the running of the companies and in terms of improving innovations and making an input basically in terms of the general performance of the company. The truth of the matter is that the results show that workers, ordinary workers on the shop floor, get empowered and they contribute in terms of the actual general planning, general ideas, general innovations in terms of how the company operates, how the company improves its own configuration, reconfiguration, and so on. So ordinary workers in companies where workplace challenge has participated through what is called the workplace forums, they then are able to make important inputs and are empowered, are able to chair meetings or cluster meetings and so forth and so on. So there are those elements that we basically look after and ensure that workers do benefit by participating in those programs. Thanks.
Thank you. In Chairperson, in terms of responding to the retainment of jobs and how we do it with turnaround solutions of the social plan, the social plan is presented by Bongani is in three phases. The second phase of that is management of retrenchment, and that is solely a role of the Department of Labor. So where I find it very critical is productivity, so we address the challenges of the country, specifically coming out of the recession last year, is that in turnaround solutions and the aspect of retainment as
alluded to, or the question was posed by Honourable Member Alina, was that the queues that are growing with UIF are in a result that companies, specifically in the private sector, they go through retrenchment or the 189 without an alternative coming in. So when we reverse the cycle is when companies immediately they start picking up issues around the distress or decline, we go in there and we are able to reverse the situation before we get companies that go into retrenchments. So that has been, I think, that is the crux or the main purpose, and that's the reason why also looking at our budget, we hope to actually increase significantly because of the numbers. And I think also the other aspect or the purpose why we feel that we are in the space of retrenchment is that there isn't any other vehicle made available by government to actually address the issue of addressing productivity issues or reversing the likelihood of job losses. The program as it is the only government program that is looking at aspects of going in there and helping companies address the issues around job losses. So I think that is critical, because once it gets to the point where you are managing a retrenchment, then that is job losses. So at least we are coming in way before that and capacitating organizations such that there isn't any job losses.
Thank you, Matsonga. I think in addition to that, what we find very useful is that we have buy-in from organized labor. So we do get referrals from union federations regarding situations where we can come in and turn around and save jobs. The next question that I will respond to was relating to the presentation where we said we provide productivity training to intermediaries such as FDF, and what we will be responding to, why FDF, what difference does it make? And I'll ask my colleague Neville to respond to that, and whilst at it, if he can also indicate the difference we make as a result of training the SMMEs. So just indicate how different is our training and why are we training the SDF.
Thank you, Bongani. Through the chair, firstly, I would like to clarify the fact that the type of training that we do is not technical training to give people skills to do plumbing. The type of training that we do is aimed at improving the productivity of those people, so it's productivity-specific training that we give, which helps to the people who are already skilled to find improved methods of doing what they already know how to do. We have specifically targeted intermediaries such as SDFs as a means of making sure that when they develop those workplace skills plans, they include productivity as a necessity to improve performance within the organization. In this way, we strategically identify them as a means of spreading productivity towards the various sectors in which their CETAs find themselves, so that they can be able to measure the productivity performance of the organizations they provide workplace skills for and include it as a means of improving the functioning of the organization. In this way, productivity is then spread throughout the country. We therefore use these organizations through the CETA. They're able to use other intermediaries, the ETD service providers that we have trained, to therefore implement productivity training and improvement in these organizations. So SDFs are critical in spreading the productivity competence. They can reach areas where we cannot reach. And it is important that we take these productivity competencies to these organizations, because the competitiveness of these organizations depends to a larger extent on people who have this productive mindset, people who can always find better ways of doing things, people who are conscious about cost curtailment, people who will improve efficiency and utilization. That is why these SDFs are very strategic to ourselves. I've covered it.
Thank you, Nevan. The other question I will respond to before I hand over to the chairperson is relating to equity status and to acknowledge that at executive and management level there's still a room for improvement. But nevertheless, in terms of the statistics internally, we have 53% female and 84% previously disadvantaged individuals. So we have improved. I will now hand over to the chairperson to respond to the two questions that were raised earlier on.
Thank you, Bongani. Honorable chairperson, if I could answer the two questions that was raised with the board. First of all, the acting CEO. As a board, we had our first induction meeting early last week. We seriously look into the situation and has immediately jump into action. We asked the Subcommittee on Human Resources to urgently come up with a term of reference here, as we find that the situation need to be remedied as a matter of urgency. Now, to this effect, the Human Resources Subcommittee we'll have another meeting this coming or next week, Tuesday, and in that meeting they will finalize the terms of reference presented to the board at a meeting later in that week, so that the board can reach finality on embarking on the process of recruitment and selection and stabilizing the management structure of productivity as such. And as I was saying, we really treat it with the utmost of urgency. We have been also asked by our shareholder, the Minister and the Director General, to really drive this thing vociferously, and we will certainly and are doing exactly that. In the Human Resources Subcommittee meeting, one has also picked up that the meetings were few and far between the last Human Resources Subcommittee were like 8 months ago, and this we will immediately remedy by consistently having all meetings so that corporate governance can take place and nothing falls through the cracks. On the question of the skill set and whether it is a fair mix, on that side, without a shadow of a doubt, we have a good mix of business. Labor and government, we have, from my assessment on two meetings thus far, sharp-minded individuals across that spectrum I've just mentioned, and really strong personalities to take productivity essay to the next level. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Department for the response to the questions. Now what I'm going to do, if there are any follow-up questions, the last person who's going to speak on the questions that you've raised or whatever question is, it's the minister. I'm not saying that he's going to re-answer the questions, but he'll be saying something. And the follow-ups that you are going to be asking, if there are any, I will not allow the department to talk. Minister can talk, because I should think that he knows what the department is doing. So, Honorable Alina and Nyakemba, short and Honorable Kumalo, any more? Oh, okay, it's three of you.
As a thing to the department, Mr. Manya, I'm not agreeing with you that the CAs are people to do the job internally, and the accountant are people just from school. Every institution, you can go to Deloitte, employment agencies, they'll give you qualified accountants, and not everybody who have run articles is a CA. So you can get them qualified, doing the job perfectly. There's something. Your structure, if you have your structure to see how many CA will want to supervise the accountants you are going to employ, we don't have that. But I don't agree that CA will be the right thing. It's to train your budget. Also, they are not going to stay if they are not getting what they want. Ask me. All my kids, I've seen they are moving from one company to the other. If they say 20,000, and all the industries here are struggling with ordinary accountants. So I think you need to revise that if you can. KPMG, all the agents, you can even have a call an accountant. There are companies who where you can get accountants from them and work for you, qualified and do the right job. I think when the last, from the department, the last one is the job description. I'm happy to hear what the comrade have said about what they're going to do on the sectoral determination. But as long as we are missing the job descriptions on any sectoral determination, that is creating problems. Even if the minister can determine that 20 rand increase on this, if he doesn't have years of service on your table, and it says 20 rand from now, if there's no job description, what I've seen is that all companies are making everybody general assistant. Whatever the minister is putting on as increase to assist the people on minimum, they stagnant because the previous sectoral determination was saying for 5 years in this position, for this in this position is so much. So the salary of the people are high. When we do away with the job description, all companies are paying as per general assistant salary finish. So workers are not benefiting. So when you look at that, I'm happy with what Mr. Cattle was saying. It will help that situation. They are not benefiting at the moment. I can bring you this stack of complaints. The last one, comrades, which is...
I hope it's the last one.
The last one today to the productivity now. I'm no more with you. I'm just saying the productivity, honestly, Minister, Director, and the CEO of Proudly South African. I should think from where I'm sitting, I see COSATO representatives here sitting in the board. With all what you say here, on this sector, that's where there's a serious crisis. And I cannot say I have heard anything from this sector to say productive South Africa is helping. On the clothing and textile, that's where we have lost the whole country workers. How you had helped them to sustain. Instead, it had actually caused more informal economy, people working from the houses and the streets. If you go to Cape Town here, people are making clothes on the street. How did you help them? I mean, the clothing and textile is eroded completely in the country by multinational, by companies from outside, by China. How did you help in that situation? It's not quite clear. And wood, paper, printing, metal. Metal, it's worse. We have been even fighting for the cable not be taken outside, must be bought here. Is that, that has never happened. So forestry, agriculture, the 2, 4, 5 sectors you are referring to, they are the critical sectors in the country now. With all the problems you are saying you are addressing, you are assisting. So I don't know, maybe I'm lost in this country. And the training, where does it take place? How you do this? You talk about organization, I don't know which one. Unless this organization sitting in your board, COSATO, can tell us that what you are saying is actually what is happening on the ground, because the workers on those sectors, they are immediately going to kill somebody if that happens. Because when you are talking about benefiting the profit and all those things, you are not telling us with this productivity how you help company to ensure that after they made profit, they help those workers also to get. You also tell us about how they maximize profit, how they control and manage. You're not telling us you train them for what? To do what? So I'm tempted to really say to the minister and the department, the 42%, this Department of Productivity must take it into Department of Labor, be controlled by Department of Labor 100%. You don't need COs. For all what you are doing in the Department of Labor, to me, that is a duplication. That 42% must be taken back. We cannot run short in the department which is really productive to the growth of the country to the duplication we are doing. What you are saying is exactly the duplication we have in the Department of Labor. If the minister and everybody agree, honestly, we need to establish that department in the Department of Labor, not to have an entity like this. Thank you.
mean, I'm going to give the maximum time to the next speaker. At least 2 minutes is maximum. Honorable Kumalo.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm covered on the issue of sectoral determination. That has to go with the job description. It is covered. But I just want to make an appeal, Chairperson, to the department that over and above that, it has been said that the professionalization and other stuff will be developed. But I think it is also important that the issue of strengthening the supervision on that component is very serious. Because you'll recall that we once became a joke when labor brokers were making, we had a public hearing when the labor brokers were also there, whereby they said completely that there were no inspections that has been made by the inspector. So I think it is somehow need to be supervised strictly. Inspectors have to be accountable at the end of the day. That they have to do the work and become accountable so that they are known, it is known that they are doing the job. Rather than having all this weight that is put there to professionalize, that they're doing this and this, but then if they are not there practically, it does not help us. Thanks.
Honorable Kumalo Nyakemba.
Thank you very much. I think firstly, the DG in a way has tried to assist us in terms of deployment, because there was a question which has an element when you spoke about certain skills in the department in his presentation. There was a comment which was linked to deployment, is it the failure of deployment? I think he tried to respond to that correctly, because it was a political question instead of responding to what the presentation was. Because the party in government is the ANC, I think that question was directed to the ANC, but it was directed wrongly to the DG. I think the point for me, Chair, is once I understand, DG, that we cannot talk to the details of the bills that are going to be presented by the minister. But it has one clarity on the public employment services section of the report, where on slide 21, according to the one that I have, there is this reference of bullet point number 2, at least 70% of unemployed people registered on the PAS system. I won't read everything. I'm just raising that and link it with slide 23, bullet point number 2 also. That speaks to 40% of existing private placement agencies. Now, the clarity that 1-6 chair is that, is this to say there will be public employment services together with private placement services which will be licensed by the department? Then if they are those private placement services, whatever name you call it, are they then going to charge on the services that they are going to render? That's clarity, Madam Chair, that I wanted to know in this area. Thank you very much.
I will give the minister to say something and respond to some of the comments that we made. A few minutes.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start with the last question. Yes, there will be public and private. You know that you cannot say there will be no private employment agencies, because the Constitution, and I remember that I chaired Chapter 2 of the Constitution that was dealing with the Bill of Rights. In the middle of the night, we agreed that there shall be also private schools. And so you know that you can't take away that right. The only thing that we will be attempting to do as per the ILO Convention 181 is to make sure that the employers who are currently having what we call administrative burden, there are many small, medium employers there who are being fleeced for doing this job because they get a lot of charges over the... I remember Masuri Bulderay that I once visited. One time there were thousands of workers. When we got there, the next time there were only 7 workers. And when we asked him, why 7? And then he told us that sad story, like the things I just described. And this fellow is paying a percentage to this Mashonisa. And the wage bill also is paid to this person. Permanently, there are only 7 people. Now, the big complaint is the difficulty to recruit for that employer. And the wish is that government must provide those services so that ordinary employers who do not have this extra money to just dish out to these Mashonisas must be able to a government office and see the matching of the skills that the employer needs, and so that the employer does not have to pay a wage bill in a certain percentage. And I want to see those who are opposed to this system, whether they think that continuing to exploit employers of this country is one thing that must be accepted. And in the same context, you are exploiting the workers. So there will be. But they will be allowed. We can't say to them they must not charge their fees, but we must provide the free service. Of course, yeah, the rest of the things were comments in relation to licensing and so on. Those are the things that will probably be covered in the law. And this law is actually quite urgent, precisely because many of the things that we're dealing with around employment services are in the Skills Development Act, which the members of Parliament know that they've now been transferred through proclamation to the Department of Higher Education and Training, which has got absolutely bugger all to do with employment services. And so to claw back all those issues back here. So this law is actually fairly urgent. But you know that employment services, some aspects of it are in the Labor Relations Act. That is Section 198. And you know part of them were in this Skills Development Act. So it's important that everything that has to do with employment services is put under one law. The one thing that I want to tell the honorable members is that there's no way that there's going to be an inspector in each and every workplace. Absolutely no way. I think what we must do as honorable members, and I'm looking at Meneer Lowe here, is to encourage workers to belong to trade unions, to belong to an organization. Even my Bible, how a woman in the Bible was created. God said it is not good for a man to be alone. I'm quoting the book of Genesis for those who maybe think that I'm just cooking something in my head. It is not good for a man to be alone, and created a woman. And so it is not good for any worker to be alone. And this is in the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. The worker must join a trade union. Anywhere in the farm, anywhere, including in this parliament where you are, they must belong. Because these workers that you see around here, they may call themselves CEOs and all these nice names and tags, but they are members of trade unions. They belong to PSA, PRASA, I don't know what else, as they are sitting here, and they are contributing to those trade unions. And so as you touch them, you must always remember that they belong, Comrade Alina, to trade unions, these workers. And some are not affiliated to COSATU, some of their unions. they are affiliated to FEDUSA, but they will be ashamed to say some of those things. In relation to, I agree, Mamdletshe, that Khumalo. No, O Khumalo in Bazo, that's why I'm saying so. When Unguma Khumalo. Okay, all right. They have real tongue with Gumletshe. Governs of France and Osaka, my cousin. Why in a room there? You are quite right that we need to monitor the work of and the work of the inspectors. That I don't want to dispute. However, the problem of the Baki Brigade, they pick up people in a Baki in the corner of a street. Firstly, it's the corner of the street. You don't know the street's name. Number two, you don't know where they are taking them to. Now, what do you expect an inspector to do? And that's precisely why this phenomenon of Trozo Wezo and Indibiza and Inuguti, the labor broker, and unfortunately, none of you have told me which law is defining a labor broker up to now, because in our South African labor law, there's no definition of a labor broker. So that's a particular problem for me. I don't know, maybe you can tell me which law is defining a labor broker. I haven't seen one, except the dictionary, Oxford Dictionary, which tells me what a broker is. It's a seller and a pander. And an insurance broker sells insurance. A labor broker sells labor. The same international organization where we belong tells us that labor is no commodity. It's a very unfortunate term to be associated with human beings in a constitutional state. Labor broker. And people are proudly selling people. And they are very proud to earning money for selling in a constitutional state like South Africa. Even if you have no house, and I will say this until cows come home, even if you have no house, you stay under a bridge, you are hungry, you have no food, you are protected by the same constitution in the Republic of South Africa. Same, with exactly the same right as Mdladlana, who is the Minister of Labor, you have exactly the same right as Nicky Oppenheimer, even if you've got nothing. There's no translator here, but it's the same thing, Louis. You understand? Now, I've said it in English first, and now I'm saying it in isiXhosa. Because when I think in Xhosa, that's the third part. You know, Productivity SA has done a lot of work to save jobs in this country. I have visited some of the projects, where one farm here in the Western Cape, where the farmer was struggling, and he had to engage with his workers away from the glare of everybody. And they were facilitated by Productivity South Africa. And those jobs were saved. And they have saved a number of jobs. But they don't just barge into places uninvited. They need to know that there's a problem here. They help. There's a problem there. They help. And I'm sure to protect the COSATU rep in Productivity SA, he meets there with there's an employer rep as well here, by the way. Because that's how we work. There's an employer rep here in this board. There is a worker rep here in this board. You can never fault it as far as not workers not knowing what they are doing and as far as the employers not knowing what they are doing. Can't fault that. So I think let's agree that on certain aspects we will disagree. Let's accept that. But the fact of the matter I know the work that they are doing, and they are assisting us a great deal on the social plan. And you will remember the social plan does not come from heaven. It was our decision, both labor, government, and employers' organizations. It was our decision. Section 189-less was our decision. All those things about meaningful negotiations before an employer dismisses or retrenches workers for economic reasons was our agreement at NETLAC. And this board is following that agreement. Until and unless we amend it, then we'll have a different, we can have a different ball game. Maybe you and the DG, Comrade Alina, I think you must also agree to disagree. The issue here is that we do not have the financial resources. I think that's the issue that mainly he was raising. Not that there are no chartered accountants, but we would like the ones that we have, Alina, you are right, they are leaving. Now, when they leave because the money that is paid is named. That's why they leave. They look for greener pastures. But it doesn't mean that we don't need them. We need them. But they leave. And you must remember that the Department of Labor, whether you like it or not, is a training ground. As soon as you say, I'm a chartered accountant, I've been working for the Department of Labor, you will be grabbed. Boom. Just like that. But because the money that is being paid, that's the issue here. It's not about cadre deployment, say. And I'm very happy to speak to a cadre of the DA deployed in Parliament, who doesn't want other parties to deploy cadres in Parliament. An amazing thing. The Premier of the Western Cape is a cadre deployed by the DA. Dan Plato is a cadre of the DA deployed by the DA, the mayor in Cape Town. Usazana. No, Sisi, Buti, as a brief man, they are elected in a party conference. I know that Dan Plato came number three now. Dennis Borda became number one. We want to see who's going to be ultimately the premier in the province so that we have a national leader here in Parliament. Cadre. I am a trained cadre of the African National Congress. I want to tell you that. Well-trained, tried, and tested. And my CV is at Lutuli House. And I'm not a Hong Kong chief. Make no mistake about it. I am not a Hong Kong. This is a teacher by profession. And think before you undermine. Teacher by profession. This one here. And I taught a number of some of these MPs and some of these officials who see it. I taught them. The fact that you were in school, I don't know what class you were doing in 1972. That's when I started teaching. If you were in school in 1972, I'm your teacher, sir. I produced you. So respect me for producing you. So I'm not what you think probably we are. So this thing is not about cadre development. It's about the serious matter about shortage of financial resources to employ people. Including this question they were raising about inspectors, chairperson, in closing. Because the honorable members are talking about UI, for instance, we need a different kind of inspector. Luckily now we've got a few audit inspectors. In the compensation, we need a different kind of an inspector now. Also the same, more or less, audit. You can't send a level one inspector to go and inspect the UIF books. It's going to be a very difficult thing for that person if that person doesn't have the qualifications in that regard. Even investigations now are becoming more sophisticated. You know, the pulp print now, we're busy with the public hearings there. If you just send any Tom, Dick and Harry there, you won't understand some of the things that are being said, why the fire, why this, why that. You need highly trained people. But they run away, chief, because we do not have the financial resources. That's the point we're talking about. Not cadre development, sir. Posts are advertised. And I'm inviting you also, if you have the skill, come on, apply. You will see how we're going to interview you. And if this man is chairing that interview, I will grill you like nobody's business. Because we're not looking in this thing the way you do. We want highly qualified people to do this job. And in fact, employment equity does not even talk about CADA. It's got a whole range of things that must be looked at before you can actually finalize this what's name. So, Chairperson, I thought those are, unless there's something else that I'm forgetting. On the sectoral determination, you know, I choose by workers on sectoral determination, always. And when she was still in one of the unions, she used to accuse me every day. I don't just take my signature and attach it to a sectoral determination. There's a long, long process as prescribed by the Basic Conditions of Employment Act that we must follow. Investigations, public hearings, trade unions participate in that. Once it comes to me, the only thing that is left according to the law is what is called a discretion, whatever that means, a discretion. But if I were to change even a sentence in that sectoral determination, the Constitution again triggers that you must explain why and give reasons, very good reasons. If they do not accept the reasons, all I must do is just to take my black pen and sign and make it law, period. And so my view is, the trade unions must be very strong, and we must assist the workers to make those unions strong and use the civil society fund at NEDLAC to train those shop stewards, because we have a civil society fund in this department in order to train even those shop stewards. That itself is funded by this department so that we train the workers. So for me, I think, Chairperson, I think colleagues must help us. As the manifesto of the ANC on page 25 says, we must assist in the unionization of workers. That's not a promise. It's a commitment. Just like contract work and subcontract work casualization address the problem of labor broking and prohibit abuse, is also in the same page. It's not a promise. It is a commitment of the things that I must do. I will not be provoked here by any little newspapers that are saying he is chickening out, he is what have you and what have you. You're not going to provoke me, certainly not for now. I stand by what I said, and I'm still saying it even as I speak. Labor brokers are not defined by any South African labor law. And therefore, that there's a place called the Trozo Wezo, and it is not in the Act. It doesn't mean that that place, Trozo Wezo, is existing in the law. You can call it Trozo Wezo as many as you want, or Croco Croco, or whatever. But if it is not in the law, then it is not in the law. I've been trying to explain this even to trade unions. What is not in the law is non-existent, is bad.
Thank you, Honorable Minister, for your input. And I think that all we are clear. We all heard what you were saying, and I think you have touched a number of issues. There are certain issues that we can explain 20 times or 100 times, and you should not expect them to appear in the public in the manner in which you are explaining them. It's because you don't own the media. I think that's the problem that we have. But I want to thank the department and
Productivity SA for the input and the discussion that we had today. Next week, or not next week, on Friday, we'll have four of your entities that will be coming down to in front of the committee. And we hope that the discussions will continue in this manner, in a very good spirit, understanding of the questions that we're asking. We'll ask questions, we'll always ask questions. At times we ask one question 10 times, and bear with us. At times, it's not that we don't know your answer. We just want to check whether you're going to give us the same answer that you gave last time. So, thank you. In those few words, thank you. I want the members of the ANC to remain for a few minutes behind. The meeting is adjourned.